The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Gabe from Thinking Outside the Long Box, and this podcast would not exist without the help of our Patreon supporters. Chad, Ryan, Derek, Doyle, Devin, Taylor, Jason, and Steve, thank you guys so much for participating with us at patreon.com/TOTLB. You have no idea how amazing it feels that you guys support our show. We want everybody to participate with us, so be sure to go to patreon.com/TOTLB and help us out so that you too can be added to the roles of people that support the best goddamn pop culture podcast called Thinking Outside the Long Box in the world.
Holy shit, put your dick away. It's Thinking Outside the Long Box with Juan, John, and Gabe.
Oh, man. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Thinking Outside the Long Box, episode 82. I'm Gabe.
I'm Tib.
I'm Doyle.
I'm Juan.
Oh, man. So, really quick before we get started, everybody, go to patreon.com/TOTLB where you can listen to before, or you can watch the video before the episode where we talk about Schrodinger's actor. Is Nicolas Cage the best actor or the worst actor or both? So,
pretty solid balance amongst the bunch of us that were down here.
I think we all agree that he's a terrible actor that's done good things. But we can't talk about it here because that's on before the episode, which you can only get at patreon.com/TOTLB. So go check that out. For as little as a dollar a month, you can watch that video. And I assure you it is hilarious. So
we are pretty funny.
Yeah.
Ning.
Looks aren't everything, though.
Really? Really, bro?
I'm sorry, my hip popped and it hurt.
Oh, such a wuss.
So whiny.
I'm gonna fucking throw around right now.
That's my daughter's saying right now.
I just want there
right
not
now.
To be juice all over my floor. That's the only thing I
Jews.
Want.
Jews.
I love
you
Jews.
Hate Jews?
Racist.
I love Jews.
They have all your money?
Probably.
And they're all over your floor now,
They had
apparently.
My money the other day because I went and saw Black Panther the theater, so.
Yep,
oh, God damn.
Hey, man, it's pretty established. There's a lot of Jews in the entertainment industry.
Man, that wasn't even Doyle saying
but
that.
But not Harvey Weinstein anymore.
That was a hard
one. No.
That was like an uppercut of racism. That wasn't a judgment.
We just went straight for it today.
All right,
so
Mel,
speaking of racism, how did Black Panther there. Go, man?
Well, I'd seen it before.
But through
other means.
But the input into your eyeballs in a movie theater.
It was good. Well, it was good. We talked about it last time,
know,
too. But it was I enjoyed it. Killmonger was... Not Killmonger. Klaw was funnier the second time around. I don't know why. He was fucking hilarious,
I think he's one of the
though.
Best parts of the movie.
Yeah, he's
I really
so
hope
funny.
They do his actual mixtape. Like, I want to hear that actor
hear that.
Rapping.
Yeah.
So don't make me listen to your music.
not just your music. Your terrible music.
Apparently there's like a big petition to get like Marvel to put him in the studio and record a mixtape.
Well, they already have Kendrick Lamar on the hook as far as the soundtrack.
Just fucking
say,
bring in
hey,
Smeagol.
Bring in two beats. Like give us two beats.
Yeah.
And then you come in and you rap a couple things.
God, I hope one of the Smeagol. Songs is called My Precious, but it's not about
but it's about
the
vibranium.
One ring. Yeah, it's about vibranium.
My precious vibranium.
My precious vibranium. Alicia. Call him.
So Mel had that realization too. She saw it on like Yahoo News or something like that.
Oh, really?
She's like, I didn't realize that because the one guy's a hobbit and then he's Gollum.
Yeah,
she's like, that's so funny. I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird, I guess.
I think this was the first.
The guy that plays Gollum?
Yeah, the guy that plays Claw is the guy that plays Gollum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the guy that played the CIA agent, whose name I can't remember because
he's the
like,
voice and everything.
Because he's token
Ross.
White guy.
Yeah. Oh, Everett Ross, I think is the character.
He's a hobbit.
Something Ross.
Hobbits is.
Everett Ross, I think it is.
Yeah, because there's two Rosses in the MCU now.
No, you're not on the mic, so you can't talk. I'm sorry.
Oh, shut up.
I can. We have
just
these
come
weird.
Here.
Yeah, exactly.
Just
that's
come here.
That's what
if
I'm
you're
saying.
Talk.
No.
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 You can't talk.
No. I'm cutting people off who are not on the fucking mics.
Wasn't he like Sherlock Holmes?
There goes Don. There goes Rio.
Yeah,
there
he was
goes
Watson.
Randy.
Okay, yeah.
All those guys are never going to be on the
pod
anymore.
No, I'm like,
anymore.
You need to move up. Yeah.
Those are way better.
Even Doyle's on a mic, and it sounds like he's way over here.
Sorry, man. Dude, so I'm fighting with time and space right now. Man, I
love tacos.
That's my Dom impression.
So we're going to talk...
Man, I love tacos!
So we're going to talk to John Blackshire today from The Lamp
Fuck
Show.
That guy.
And I need to make a clarification. I don't
know what that noise is.
I think
fuck lamps.
I think that's fuck lamps.
Futuristic lamp. Combat with The Lamp Show. That's with lasers, motherfucker.
So I think on like the last three episodes, I've said The Lamp Show is spelled with two A's. And it's not. It's spelled with two M's. It's LAMMP. So, like, I was listening to the podcast, hearing him say, "Let's all make music, please." And still in my brain, it was two A's, which would be, "Let's all make, please." Yes, I speak a good English.
Oh, wow, that was
sorry, that was
too.
Racist, too. Yeah.
You speak good.
What thinking outside the racism?
When did this show become like the Klan version of the show?
Dude, it was Mexican
Doyle. Doyle, the introduction of Doyle.
Oh man,
have become quite the end.
My first show coming on was all about butt plugs and sex toys. Yeah, it's all about racism.
Now it's all about racism.
Who's the weird guy who goes on Tell 'Em Steve Dave?
Oh, I can never remember that guy's name.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm not that. That dude's creepy, like, I think he kills people.
Dude, we were talking about, what show, I've been watching this show on Netflix that's like my go-to-sleep show, okay? Like, everybody has a show like that.
Lately, I don't know if it's because I'm old now or I have two kids or what, but I fucking get to the bed and just, whoof, I'm out.
Oh, no, like, so
fucking weird.
What I do is I'll put the Kindle on and I'll pull this show up. And I literally very rarely get through the introduction of the show. So, like, I know that I enjoy the premise of the show, but I watched very few episodes of the show. It's called Four Rooms, and it's like a guy brings in, like, an antique or a collectible or something, and there's four, like, antiques / collectibles dealers, and he goes from room to room, and, like, the first guy gives him an offer, and if he accepts it or declines it, if he accepts it, he gets that money. If he declines it, he goes to the next room. If he declines it, he goes to the next room. And you get in these situations where the first guy offered you like $60,000 and you said, no, I can get more. And you get to the last room, the guy's like, I'll give you $20, you know? So it's like this little gamble that you do with your collectible to sell it. So I really dig this show. It's super stupid. It's BBC, so all the collectors are like super snooty, like,
proper.
I enjoy artwork. Yeah. So, Tim and Mel and I, we were a little bit weeded, sitting on the couch.
No,
that's
no.
Yeah.
That's not true at all.
My life.
No, that's a lie. You're never a little bit weeded.
Yeah, that's... Okay, good point. So, they're like, let's watch something dumb. I was like, let's watch my dumb BBC show.
Big Black Cock Show?
Yeah.
Yeah, Big Black. Okay. Biggest black dicks we've ever seen.
Huge. It's huge.
It's huge.
Gonna make a wall.
Yeah. Wall of black
out of black dicks.
I think I've seen that video. Anyway, so we put on this
with the
show.
White women in between. Is that how that works?
Where are all the white
unemployment
women?
Unemployment rates would be the lowest ever, though. You gotta pay them.
They are the lowest ever right now, as we speak.
So, wow.
So we're talking about how good Walt Flanagan would be at that show. Because, like, no matter what you bring into Walt Flanagan's shop, he doesn't want to buy it.
Yeah. Like, he's always like, Ming, get the do you want this thing?
Like, just his attitude, like, his New Jersey, out the door, I dislike you just because you're a different human being than me. Like, his look, the look he gives where his, like, eyes get all wide and he just nods his head up and down, which means I'm completely checked out of this conversation.
I will tell you that I think that that's a TV thing.
Yeah.
Because I've met him in real life and he's super, super nice. And
oh, no.
Super, super appreciative. But he on Tell 'Em Steve Dave, he doesn't like doing the show. And Kevin Smith convinced him because he said, I'll only do it if Brian Johnson does it. And he didn't think that Brian would do it. And then Kevin Smith convinced him to do it, and he's like, oh, fuck, I guess we got to do it then. But he doesn't like doing it. They don't like it because it's not who he is. He's very shy. He doesn't like to be in front of cameras and shit, but it's funny.
I genuinely think he hates buying things from people, though, because, like, as a business owner, he probably doesn't really want to.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that people bring him, while impressive, is probably stuff he already has in the shop.
Well, like, a lot of the times they work that stuff out before they record.
Yeah.
So you know what's coming in.
Even John at Hall of Justice, I mean... Sure, his new shop is only in his second year, but there's shit that he doesn't want in there that people try to sell him all the time.
Right.
It's hysterical when, like, I'll show up there after work a couple of days and be like, what the fuck are all these long boxes doing? Some asshole brought these by, tried to sell them, left them. Like that kind of shit happens all the time. I'm like, now I understand why, like, Walt, even if it is, like, a TV persona, like, it makes total fucking sense.
Dude, because I remember when I worked at the comic book that shall not be named, people would bring in like six long boxes of like Youngbloods, you know, just Youngblood 1 through 10, six long boxes worth of that, and be like, well, you know, I read that these are like $3 each, and so I should be able to get like, you know, $15,000 for it. It's like, nah, nope. I'm gonna offer you a cool hundo so that I can use it for like packaging material.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. We should talk about how we almost lost our hero. How Kevin Smith died.
Almost came to Fat Man, is he?
Oof.
And he's skinny, too.
Dude, I was...
Maybe he was fat for a long time.
Yeah, like, he was. He was.
He was too young for a bucket to win.
Yeah. I was, like, I woke up that morning and, like, looked at my phone and saw Kevin Smith, massive heart attack, but hadn't, like, fully read the thing. I was like, oh, God, no! Not Kevin!
Yeah, and then I heard... Bzzz. And I was like, what the fuck time is it?
I forgot that I texted you at like 4:30.
Kevin Smith had a heart attack. I was like, what? It's fucking 4 in the morning.
I forgot I texted you when I first woke up. I know Doyle has this problem too, where our schedules are so fucked up compared to other people's schedules that we don't think.
I'll pick up my phone and shoot a text at 2:30 in the morning and be like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's 2:30 in the morning.
Which is fine. So for me, it's fine. I don't care. I leave my phone on so that if in case somebody fucking goes sideways, I can go.
Like help. Kevin Smith? Yeah.
Well, but anything. It doesn't matter. Like, there was a time where it was like a month ago. We just got this new security system at Honda and blah, blah, blah. And the door was open and it was going off all night. And the cop found my business card. So he called me like 4 times. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I couldn't reach any fucking boss because they're all. Have their phones so you can't hear them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck good is... I was like, I'm glad I'm not fucking related to any of you bastards because I couldn't get a hold of you if I was fucking dying. Like, it's stupid. I was so pissed. Cop kept calling me. Cop calling me. Stop calling me, big.
Be like, stop calling me, big!
Yeah.
Be like,
we got enough bacon here, motherfucker.
Am I being detained?
It's not breakfast yet. I've been watching a lot of those videos in the past week.
What's that?
Those videos about people who don't want to give their ID to cops and shit. People who think they're sovereign. It's funny.
I mean, I get it, and they're right, but fuck, save yourself the bullet, bro. Like, you don't know who you're fucking with.
I love watching cops either tase people or get put in their place, and it makes me laugh. I don't know why.
I don't like being tased. It's no fun.
No, I've never been tased. I like watching other people get tased.
That's why I don't like watching it. Because I'm like, that guy shit his pants.
Devin's
right now.
Oh my God, this is making me anxious. Stop.
Don't tase me, bro.
What's stronger, taser or cattle prod?
Oh, cattle prod by a long shot.
Yeah, I've been cattle prodded quite a few times, but never tasered.
You think? I feel like the taser. Well, the ones that I see the cops have are the ones that shoot into you.
Yeah, and
so
you
they
know
can
what?
Just keep pressing the fucking button.
You're probably right. A taser probably is stronger than a cattle prod.
Tasers fucking kill people.
Because a cattle prod's meant to just be like a spark.
It still hurts like a motherfucker.
Yeah, it's not fun.
I've touched the horse fence because they're on pulses, so you think it's off, and then it just flat.
Yeah,
I pissed on an electric fence once. Ugh. That was rough.
There was an episode of MythBusters about that. Don't do that shit.
No, it was 100% on accident. Like, I didn't know the fence was electrified. It was kind of like behind a little bush. We were like, I worked on a farm on the summers when I was a kid. I just really had to take a piss. I went behind the bush. I peed. One of the wires was like on the ground. It had like fallen off the post and was on the ground. And I had no idea. pissed right on the wire. Like,
ah, dude, my dick.
My dick for like a week, man. Like, it was...
You're lucky for only a week.
Dude, it was the fucking worst. Like, that's probably why I have so many kids, though, is because I have a superhero dick now. It's super small, but man, it's strong.
Kayla's going to start developing her mutant power soon.
Oh, she already has mutant powers. It's called badassery and toughness. Thanks. You're welcome.
You're off the mic, though, so nobody heard that.
Yeah. Shh.
You're worthless.
So, anybody got notes?
So, I watched, cool. I finished Runaways.
Oh, nice.
I still have no fucking idea what's going on.
Dude, they ran away.
They don't, no, well, they did run away at the very end, but they don't answer anything. They literally answer no fucking questions in the whole fucking season, and it's fucking stupid. And I like the show. They're good actors, in my opinion. You know, I like it.
Better than Nicolas Cage, I assume?
Yeah, better than Nicolas Cage. Yes, yeah. But it's just you don't...
Worse.
Or worse. They're not all in box.
Do we rate Nicolas Cage above or below Iron Fist?
Well, I mean, what movie, I would assume. Like, Nicolas Cage
as a whole.
It was a whole.
The answer maybe is, right on the same level.
The answer is okay.
But Runaways didn't answer anything. You still have no idea why or what is going on with the parents. I don't know if they're good guys or bad guys. I don't know why the girl has alien powers. If she sounds like she's an alien now, and it's just so weird to get through a whole season and not know what the fuck's going on still. Like, it's the fucking weirdest thing ever. I don't know what the fuck to even say. You know, it's good. I mean, cool. Now they're running away, but I don't know why.
Basically, you're like, I enjoyed it, but who cares?
Yeah. Like, I don't know why the dinosaur is. They didn't explain, like, she has some sort of telepathic abilities with this dinosaur, but I don't know why. She's I don't know if they experimented on their daughter or what. Like, it's just weird. I don't know. There's just no answers.
So are you in for the second season though?
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. I enjoyed this, the acting, the action, all of that stuff. But there's just I and it's because I want to be like, what the fuck? I need to know what's going on that I want to watch the second one. But it was just a weird season. Very weird season.
Huh.
I watched it all, so I can't. I feel like I knew what was going on though from where I was at.
I know that
where I was at was like
this alien dude. I know this alien dude hired so the parents to kill
where
people.
I was it?
For something.
Yeah. Doyle's weeded.
Very weeded.
God damn you, marijuana. Why?
How about you, Doyle? You read anything, watch anything good lately?
I read a bunch of stuff this week, but I can't talk about it because I got to write reviews about it. I did watch the newest trailer for Lost in Space, which has the robot not being... The robot's school. Alien.
Yeah.
Which was dope.
The robot's an alien?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the robot from like the old
like,
60s
I think
show
it's
at
sentient.
All.
Like,
yeah.
I think it's a sentient character, not like a tool that he follows him around and makes sure he's out of danger. But yeah.
He made a jack-off movement for our listening audience.
Danger, Will Robinson.
The robot beat you off, danger, Will
Robinson. Like,
I haven't seen the newest one.
A lot of people. I saw the trailer too. Like, there's been a lot of people kind of poo pooing on this remake of Lost in Space. But Tim and I were talking about it last night. I'm actually pretty excited for it.
I'm fucking
like,
jacked for it.
I didn't see the first one, so I'm not. I'm essentially Schrodinger's
like
cat
teaser.
Right now. I don't have any opinion.
My opinion is that it's amazing.
Yeah. The teaser is literally them like walking down a gangway to a rocket. It's like, why
a gangbang?
Yeah. A gangway?
Oh, gangway.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
People
I was
don't
more
walk
excited
down
for gang the
gangbangs. I don't think.
Nice
alien robots,
bangs,
fucking
you know?
All kinds of Will Robinsons. Just
dodging the juices.
Jack off movies.
There's Wills and Robins and Sons.
Oof.
And it
that
gets
got,
really
that
weird.
Gross, real
gets really weird.
I mean, you're a son.
That's true.
Sun doesn't dictate age.
I'm not saying that there's young people involved.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
gross.
With you. I'm on your team, bro.
Yeah,
that's I'm defending you.
He's Team Sun.
Yeah.
Team Sun.
Sun come.
That's a porn. That's a porn somewhere.
Definitely a porn.
I don't know why that reminds me, but we had this discussion at work.
About
back
sons
to the Lion
and
King. No, Lion King.
Yeah, I just watched that yesterday.
Yeah.
Are they not like pedophiles? like when you watch the movie as an adult, like they're two.
Can an animal be a pedophile? Vicarious
animals chilling in the woods. Child animal comes and they're like, yeah, you can hang out with us forever.
Maybe they're just nice guys.
I don't know. It was really creepy when I watched it. Really,
I definitely did not pick up that Timon and Pumbaa were like a relationship either.
I did.
They can't be in a relationship.
They're different animals. I mean, they could,
but they're different animals.
Is it still bestiality if it's two different species?
Oh, I think it's bestiality that aren't human? If it's just animals.
I guess, yeah, technically.
When just animals do it, it's just...
Interspecies relationship.
Yeah, right? When there's no female getting ran by a dog, is it still bestiality, or is it just normal dog sex?
That, I don't know, but now...
Food? Somebody right now is listening to this, like, smoking weed, and they're like, whoa. In fact, that might even be one of us later.
It's Doyle oh, yeah. right now. Doyle right now is like, wow, mind blown.
Oh, man. Yeah, a little bit.
So, oh,
man, that's funny.
Interspecies erotica.
I watched a couple episodes of Legion.
How's that going?
Thoroughly confused by that one, too. But it's I think it's meant to confuse me.
Which one's that?
The Legion, the X-Men.
Oh.
It's good. It's actually good, but with it happens in...
Son of Xavier or whatever he's supposed to be. He has a weird...
Spoilers!
Motherfucker. Comic came out forever ago.
It does what Xavier does.
Look, yeah, he's got premonitions, I think, is what it ends up being. But yeah. It happens in different times because of his power, and that's kind of confusing. But I actually really enjoy it. It's, nice. It's a good show.
It's definitely one of those ones I want to make myself watch because, like, the first episode was really like, what the fuck?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I was like, I get it, Legion. But seriously.
Well, because
it was like they took a bunch of clippings from the whole season and fucking threw it in the first episode.
It's because they're in different times and you don't know what's going on. And then two people kiss and then they switch bodies and then it's extra fucking confusing. But it's good. I enjoyed it. I think I'm three or four episodes in right now.
Nice.
Definitely a good watch.
I read the full Marvel Legacy Spirits of Vengeance, like the 5-issue run. So I read the first issue and was like, wow, this is going to be horse shit. Like, I'm so not into this.
You gabed it.
Yeah, I completely gabed it. And then I was like, well, I have all 5 issues. I love Spirits of Vengeance. Let's do this. By the time I got to the last issue, I was like, wow, that was a lot of fun. Like, it was very, like, 90s-esque team of supernatural superheroes beats up the devil. You know, like, I mean, and it's exactly what I used to love about Spirits of Vengeance in the 90s. There's a great cover lift on issue 2 that goes back to Spirits of Vengeance issue 3 of both Spirits of Vengeance titles, where like the main female bad guy is holding Ghost Rider by the neck up in the air. I thought that was a really cool little cover lift thing that they did. There's really only one thing I don't like about it, and I've been seeing it a lot in Marvel's newer comics. Some of the artists do this thing where after the art is done, if it's a big action-y move, like, you know, Ghost Rider whipping his chain out, afterwards in digital effects, they add like movement streaks to it, which blurs out the image. And I think it really, really detracts from the art. Like, if you position, you know, Ghost Rider with his arm out in front of him and the chain going straight out, your brain intuits that he's slinging that chain out from him.
Yeah.
You don't need all those action lines in there to muddy up a drawing that you fucking spent forever drawing. Like, don't... It's just unnecessary. Or he
could have just drawn those in.
Yeah, like, yeah. He could have just drawn those in instead of manipulating it digitally and just making it look blurry and mushy. And, like, especially with a character like Ghost Rider, who's got 8 chains swirling around him while he's, like, punching a demon in the face and the demon's got stuff coming out of his eyes. Like, it's already a confused picture. Like, it's already
a very
action-packed picture. But then to add these blurry parts to it just makes it look messy. And I don't like it, but...
I can feel that.
This story was good, and like other than that taking me out of the comic book a couple times where I was like, man, fuck this digital effect. Like, stop doing that. Like,
yeah, Tim.
The art itself was really... You know what sucks too is the art was great except for that. And you know that it was done after the fact. where somebody was like, we need to make this look more actiony, or we need to make this look more like manga is what it really is. And it's like, man, screw that. It looks good.
Just it's all the editors. The artist is like, fuck it, I got paid.
Yeah. Just let it be what it is, an American comic book. It looks fine. Like, just leave it. But Ghost Rider looks cool. I'm excited for Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider, which is coming, I think came out on Wednesday.
Is that the outer space one?
I think so, yeah.
Ghost Rider in space.
Which
usually when things go to space, it's not good.
Dude, I love Ghost Rider.
Can you
Rider.
Even flame on when you're in space?
No oxygen, bro.
In space, there is no flames.
It's just a skull.
Does he have, like, no, is he on, like, the fucking stay. Shuttle and the space. Shuttle's, like, all on fire?
Oh, that would be cool.
That would be fucking legit.
Like, that was genuinely my favorite.
He's, like, riding on the Hubble. It's all in flames in space.
That shit either.
So my favorite scene
that one's free, Marvel.
In Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider Spirits of Vengeance is when he gets on that giant,
right.
like, earth mover thing and flames that whole thing out. I was like, this movie sucks. But that is fucking awesome. Like, he's all, I'm going to ride this giant thing.
He's fucking on a giant Euclid. Flames everywhere.
Oh, dude. So if Ghost Rider is...
be to watch Ghost Rider fight Spawn. There's so much extra.
I would
read that.
So many chains and flames and green fire everywhere.
The capes and
the fight's not even happening where you think it's happening.
As an artist alone, just trying to figure out in my artist brain how the fuck I would draw something like that. Get fucked.
You should draw so much
crap. Suddenly, I really want you to draw it.
Yeah, me too.
Please make checks out to Jim Husky, aggravated artist.
That'll cost you about $500.
Have the outfits do
not that much.
And they will play chess in the other panel.
Oh, that'd be amazing. They're like chilling. a picture of Ghost Rider and Spawn in like the upper right-hand corner playing chess.
Just naked?
While their like capes and chains fight each other for the rest of the scene.
They both have motorcycles, too. Spawn has a motorcycle at one point.
Oh my god, that was the stupidest gimmick. I remember that.
Because he had a car too. Spawn had all kind of dumb shit. Because McFarlane was just like, toys!
Let's make Batman toys.
Yeah. He had a car, he had a bus. No, Violator had a bus. That was fucking weird.
Well, no, wasn't it a van?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With no windows?
Yes. No windows. I think it said Violator on the side and had his demon face painted on the side.
How many issues in are we dealing with, like, the super ridiculous, creepy pedophile in the Spawn comic? Does anybody else read Spawn?
I want to say that was, like...
I read it.
I think it's like first five, isn't it?
Or yeah, is it I think it's issue? Like the first issue. That's who Spawn is hunting is the pedophile guy.
That comic book when it came out was not like playing games.
No, I think the first
writing.
I want to say like
I
the
like
first
I took
like
down, but
I want to say the first like 12 to like 20 issues of Spawn is super serious and really dark
and good too.
Yeah. I mean, albeit that '90s really, really somewhat good. Spunky, cartoony feel. But still, like, a decent storyline. Like, for sure.
Next subject.
So, finished Strayer. I had 2 issues of that 5-issue run left. Like, I've made this mistake a couple of times where, like, books that I know are going to come out in, like, 5 or 6 issues, I'll get, like, 3 of them from John, read all 3 of them, be super excited about it, then have to wait 6 weeks to go get the next one, and maybe I get, like, 1 more, and then I think to myself, oh, I'll just wait till, like, the 5th one comes out, and I wait 3 more weeks, and I get the 5th one, and put it in the box, and I go... oh, man, but I read those first 3, like, 2 months ago. I'll read them later. And then, like, 9 months later, I was like, I should probably finish this run. So this week with Strayer and the Kelly Jones Swamp Thing that came out, like, I want to say at the end of 2016 or beginning of 2017.
Nice. Hey, man, that's all right.
I finished both
I'm
of those.
Sure I still got a whole thing of fucking Gwenpool and shit in there.
So. I tagged the artist of Strayer in my Instagram post about it. And had asked him, he had responded, oh, you know, thanks for saying something about the comic. Thanks for tagging me. I'm going to find the comment really quick. He said, thanks a lot. Glad you liked it. And I asked him, you know, dug the shit out of it. Is there a second chapter? Because at the end it says end of chapter 1. And he says, no, not that I know of. And I said, no, I need more. So...
Hopefully. And then he's like, stop talking to me, nerd.
Yeah, he's like, fuck off. He's
you know
all,
who I am.
He's all, stop sending,
you know
me, stop sending me dick pics. But yeah, I was a little bummed to hear that there's no plans for a second Strayer right now. But
I haven't even read it.
It's a lot of fun. Like it's basically this barbarian gets wizarded by this lady that needs help, so that he has to follow her and has to protect her, right? And so he fights, you know, all these different monsters and this group that's chasing her. And over time, he stops needing the spell to kind of hold him to her, and actually becomes friends with her. And so at the end, she basically plunges to her death to like save the rest of the group. And as she's doing it, she releases Strayer from the spell, and then he dives in to save her, you know, even though he doesn't have to. So it was a cool little turn. I liked it. It was a lot of fun.
Then they scissored.
They did not scissor.
Oh, yeah. That's lame.
Because it's
lame. There's at least 4 out of 5 people here say that.
All right. I mean, I wish they would have scissored. You've changed my mind.
I really feel like you took the book in a totally different direction.
The
last few panels.
The Kelly Jones.
Whoa, that came out of nowhere.
Holy crap! There's a lot of sex in these last few panels.
That's what I said about Conan. Holy shit!
There's a lot of titties in that movie.
Blood and tits.
Every time he has sex, it's okay. We can talk about that.
Yeah, that's next segment.
Yeah, that's pop culture classic. Don't waste it. Don't waste it.
Don't waste it. Weed.
I'll remember.
The Kelly Jones Swamp Thing that I finished up, that was a lot of fun too. Kelly Jones, one of my favorite artists, written by Lin Wein. It totally goes into like nutty. How can we put all of the supernatural superheroes into one comic for the last issue? So it gets revealed that Matt Cable, who's the CIA agent, that, you know, has taken Swamp Thing into him so that Alec Holland can be a human again, is actually possessed by Anton Arcane. And it's like the total like 60s, 70s. You thought I was Matt Cable, but actually I'm big splash lettering Anton Arcane. I was like, oh, cool. Arcane is Swamp Thing, and like Deadman, Spectre, Phantom Stranger, Zatanna, Alec Holland is a human, all gang up to beat him. I'm like, oh yeah, that I could have seen that coming. Surprised they didn't go get Batman too. Like, so
they don't like Batman.
No, Swamp Thing and Batman have a strained but decent relationship at this point. But just dug the shit out of it. Love the art. Like, if there's anybody whose hands I want on me, it's definitely Kelly Jones. Wow. No, I'm just kidding. That's not what I mean. Anybody who...
Yeah. Watch your step, Kelly Jones.
It's a dude. So...
Knows me.
No, the person to pick up the legacy of Bernie Wrightson drawing Swamp Thing is Kelly Jones. Like, Kelly Jones has a style that's not anywhere near as detailed and intricate as Bernie Wrightson's, but the feel of Kelly Jones' art just really feels like the right person to draw Swamp Thing going forward when they do stuff with him. Organic Paquette, he does an amazing Swamp Thing too.
Yeah, I have one of his on my wall.
Everyone has one of his.
That's fine.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I keep it in my shoe.
I don't think
left
he does.
Shoe.
Liar.
No, he makes his money. He don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
What?
I said he makes his money. He doesn't give a fuck.
I don't know what that means.
I'm saying that when
Yannick
you
Paquette
ask,
doesn't care what he draws as long as you give him money.
No, I'm saying when Yannick Paquette does a Swamp Thing commission, he does the same one every time.
Oh, I'm fine with that. I don't care. Mine doesn't have to
you're
be
not
different.
Special,
yeah, it's fine. I'm okay with that.
Nobody likes you.
I'm okay with that, though.
No, I like Juan.
I'm okay with that, though.
I like his
come
mouth
to terms
anyway.
With those things.
Yeah, I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Anybody else?
Someone got real touchy.
Anybody seen Jessica Jones yet?
No.
I want to find so bad.
It came out on like Wednesday or Thursday.
Thursday. There's a whole article about why it came out on Thursday instead of Friday.
It came out on International Women's Day. Yeah. That's why it came out on Thursday.
Sorry.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
There we go.
And we wonder why Doyle's single.
I don't wonder.
He's all fuck women.
I know.
No, not with that attitude.
It's because he can't find a woman of the color he wants.
Yeah, black.
That goes against everything you've ever said on this show.
Just like how Eminem was gay, man. In the interview in that movie that you hated.
Yeah, it was pretty terrible.
You gotta give a choice or a chance.
You just gotta find a woman who likes men who shits a bag.
So,
one time, there's a woman. Years, that's pretty common.
There's a woman.
There's
I'm
a
sure,
woman.
I'm oh, sure.
Yeah, I know that's true.
There's probably a woman. Disturbing. There's probably a woman who wants him to shit on her.
All right, GD Allen, calm down.
Can't handle that right now.
Is that the only emails you guys get for some reason? Just girls who want me to shit in a bag. Like, ladies.
Yeah, I want you to shit in that bag.
She's having a hard time eating. You're making her gross out.
So I have some Tim notes.
Oh, fuck.
You ready for Tim notes, Tim?
If I can remember what they are.
So, I've been playing a video game this last week that my son introduced me to called Fortnite.
I don't know that you should be playing that.
So, Fortnite is this video game where you drop into a 100-person PvP arena, and it works exactly like Battle Royale. You go on...
What the fuck is PvP?
Player versus player. Okay. So, did you ever see the movie Battle Royale? Are you familiar with this Japanese movie? So, think The Hunger Games, okay? You get dropped into an island. Oh, yeah. You don't have any weapons. You don't have any gear. You run. You find some gear. You try to kill people or you try to hide to win.
Okay.
That's what Fortnite is. It's extremely popular. I actually had to wait 10 minutes to get on the game yesterday because there were so many people logged in. It's very, very fun. But talking with Tim about it, there's like this entire culture of esports that I don't know anything about. And Tim was talking to me about it.
I don't even know what that means.
So it's basically competitive video gaming, electronic sports. And they're like, it used to be just like...
That's in the Olympics this summer or when it comes back.
What?
There's going to be a whole... There's going to be some video games at the Olympics.
So you can see how much more traction this is gaining very quickly. Gabe's like, gotta write that down.
Sports.
Is it not?
It's in the name, apparently.
In the same way that golf and bowling are?
Yeah, those are dumb too.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Many sports are more like games than actual anything that requires athleticism. I mean, some people don't think baseball is a sport because you hit a ball, you run, you stand.
Those people are wrong.
Curling. Dude, you're literally just sliding something across the floor. Like, it's not a sport, it's a game. And if we're going to celebrate one version of gaming, we should celebrate.
So, I didn't know about the Olympics thing, but I did know that there are several, like, huge, like, NFL sports owners. The CEO of ESPN owns a team that plays video games. It's like
wasn't
kind
there
of
a whole like '90s movie based on a dude going to play tournaments. He's playing Mario or he's playing
the Wizard?
Tetris or some shit like
so
that.
So it used to be just like arcade house. Like here's 100 quarters. Whoever makes it to the end is gonna win like a $10 gift certificate.
That's a lot of fucking
now it's like here's teams from all over the world playing. I don't know, Dota 2. You won't know what that is.
No.
And well, the jackpot.
Explain it because
Defender
like,
of the Ancients 2 and. The winner of that, like the last couple jackpots have been in the millions of dollars. Like it's insane the money that can be made now just playing video games.
So when I drop into
anything though.
So when I drop into a game of Fortnite, I am an extremely casual player.
Right.
Like, you know, I think the longest stretch I've played it for is like a couple hours in one shot, right? But I drop in, I find a gun, and I go fucking hide until like somebody finds me, and then I hope that I get a decent place so that I can like get a little bit more experience than I would have before, and then eventually earn like, you know, one of the dumb little badges. Like I'm just playing for fun.
Right.
Like I run around, I shoot people, like sometimes I kill people, most of the time I die, you know?
Meanwhile, there's like...
Meanwhile...
Joe Blow, who's like trying to get into these competitions, who's going to headshot you with a sniper rifle from like a million yards away.
So there's a... In the game, there's also a building component where you can like build structures around yourself to protect yourself. Because eventually, as the game goes on, the play map shrinks by a storm comes in and it gets smaller and smaller and forces everybody together in the center.
Yeah, sort of forces the conflict. So
when you die, you can either exit to the lobby and just drop into a new game, or you can watch the person that killed you. And then if that person gets killed, you then watch the person that killed them, right? Mm. And so eventually you can watch, you know, the top one or two person play, and you can literally watch these people like, and I don't even know how this is possible.
It's so fluid
where they're like
level.
Fluidly because you have to switch which mode you're in, weapons mode or building mode. They will build five walls and then instantly shoot someone and then build walls and stairs and a bridge and then shoot down on somebody in like these fluid movements that speak to like a level of skill that I literally could never attain. Like I would have to play so much of this game. Like, and it's just,
well, how much you want to bet a lot of these people who do this are fucking young.
Like some of them aren't.
Some of them aren't.
A lot of the leagues I watch, you got to be 18 or older to play.
Well, still pretty young, though.
The other thing is, there's people that young like adult. This is just they do. Like,
I'm 31. I guess young is relative to how what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. And watching, like, you know, Tim and Ashton were watching some Dota videos yesterday, and then Ashton was watching a bunch of Fortnite videos yesterday, and just. I mean, just the skill level to play this game is relentless.
Games are fucking hard.
Dude, it's nuts.
Boggles my mind.
They're not easy.
I love like, my Final Fantasy 15 where I just like wander around and kill monsters. Like,
but even then, you got to the point where it was like four buttons on a controller, and then you got to the Xbox controller and it was like 15 buttons and shit. And it's confusing.
Two
like,
joysticks, a D-pad, couple of triggers.
It's not easy.
There are literally 13 buttons on a PlayStation 4 controller. That's nuts.
Just like, figure them all out.
Yeah.
Do you include the joysticks? Because those push down as buttons, too.
There's no easy way to turn the fucker off while you're watching a movie.
Isn't that fascinating? I had that problem last night.
There is a way, if you don't know it. It's a secret.
We got to the end of Conan last night.
Google that shit for like an hour. Like, what the fuck would turn you off?
We got to the end of Conan last night, and it's like brought up the menu, and my controller had turned itself off because it had been resting so long, but it also wouldn't recognize itself because it was turned off, and it like just wouldn't let me do anything. I was all, I'll just eject the disc, and as soon as I ejected the disc, everything came back to life. I was like, oh, okay, cool, but I don't know. It was just super fascinating because it's not anything that I'm familiar with. It's not something that I'm...
Like, the skill floor is so low that anyone can get into it, but the skill ceiling is so high, you could literally make a living playing video games now.
Well, and that's why I say it's probably a game... It's probably a thing for a lot of young... It's when they start. Probably pretty young, and you're with your parents or whatever, and that's probably all you fucking do. Is
like, it's too late for us, but like, if Ashton suddenly wanted to like play Fortnite... Like a lot.
There's no way. I mean, there's probably people who just play.
There's no way he's getting into that either.
But there's people who just play, I'm sure, for like 10 hours or something. I don't have 10 hours.
Fuck that, dude. There's probably people that play for 18 hours a day.
Well, like, and then there's.
I watched Diablo 3 not too long ago, which I got halfway through, but because I fall out of love with video games really fast. I was talking to some, like, guild leaders who are on there that would play for 18, 19 hours straight.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd be like, why are you in our guild, bro, if you're not serious? I'm like, I've been playing for 8 hours, motherfucker. You're can't feel my thumbs.
you're like, I have a motherfucking job, dude.
I was in a guild like that, and there was one guy, and his handle was like Dionysus. And I swear to God, every time I'd like turn on my computer and flip up like the Blizzard loader for all those games, he is always on Diablo 3. And he's always got
he's always on.
He's always on.
That's the fucking Easterner coming out of you. Yeah. No, sure. I don't ever hear that coming out of your mouth, but I just heard it. That's the first time I think I heard
She's
it.
She's been out here
you.
Longer than me. Yeah. I still say oil and warsh and
warsh.
Bald. You said it with a T. I did. So that's how long you've been out here. It's Bald DeBorn.
You got to talk into a mic though, or Juan's gonna start yelling.
Nobody can hear you.
I didn't say Balmore. I said Baltimore.
Balmore?
Balmer.
Balmer.
Balmer Ball or Baldemore?
No, Balmore.
Balls in mouth. That's what I'm
hearing. Really, the official language of Baltimore is gutter speak.
It's mumble.
That's what I call
it's
it.
Mumbler.
It's mumble rap.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Oh,
Panda.
One of the people in my office is horrendous with English from a Spanish perspective. So when they talk to the people who are can't speak English from the fucking like Vietnamese or Ethiopia or
Somali,
Sudan or Somalian, it is the weirdest shit because I'm trying to understand what they're explaining to one another. And I'm in charge of it, and I was like, I don't think you're supposed to do anything that you just said.
But I don't know. Yeah.
That's you know, what you need to do is teach them sign language.
You can tell Doyle actually works with like Sudanese people because he called it Sudan like they do.
Yeah.
Sudan.
You sound all NPR.
It's tough. I'll tell you, it's tough. I was trying to sell a car to a dude who spoke Chinese. for some reason, the receptionist came and got me. She's like, hey, I got a guy who speaks Chinese out here. I was like,
you're like, what cool? the fuck is am like, I supposed to do with that?
He's got a translator. I was like, oh, all
right. You're like, so, you're, like you're brown. So, you speak other languages, right? No,
the translator was an app. It wasn't an actual person.
Oh, my God.
So we're there yelling at each other on the showroom floor because I don't know what the fuck he's saying. And I have the Google Translate on my phone, but I don't, you know, it always translates funky. So I don't know if what it's saying is actually what I'm trying to say. So you're just look like a bunch of morons.
You're like,
basically the receptionist.
Would you like to buy a Honda? He just punches you in the face.
The receptionist was like, you're brown. You speak other languages, right?
Might be slanted. Get out there.
Oh, wow.
You could be like Pacific Islander or something.
Slanty eyes. It's a real feature.
Doyle!
He calls them Orientals, for Christ's sake.
That was Doyle, ladies.
Yeah, Doyle Daniels on Facebook.
You'll see his sexy bot at the charity event.
I don't know why. I guess. Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, the charity event.
Oh, I probably haven't even told her.
Oh, wow.
So we're...
Well, okay. You have it.
It's not until October.
There's really...
Well, let's talk about that before we take a little break and go into our pop culture classic. Let's not forget that...
I don't know
that
if we'll have time.
At some time in Black October... Next. I know. Okay. Sometime in October, we're still working on the details.
Fuck lamps.
We will be doing the Battle of the Seamen, Namor versus Aquaman... In a historic battle to see which seaman is stronger, which seaman swims upstream the best, which seaman is the juiciest.
And who's going to come first?
Who's going to come in first?
Phrasing.
Probably John. Fuck you, John.
But for Hero Initiative, we're going to be raising some money. Keep an eye out on our webpage, www.totlb, for more information on that. And look forward to floppy copies from Doyle. He's been writing some articles about the comic books he's reading. Look forward to every Wednesday from Hall of Justice Comics and Collectibles, our What's Coming Out This Week article. And I got my new computer, so there's going to be 3 new articles every week coming out. There's going to be On the Horizon, which is going to be kind of – we get a bunch of emails every week from all sorts of different people telling us about new things that are coming out.
It's so hard to keep up with all those things.
You know, I'm going to pick like 3 or 4 things that actually look super interesting and post about those.
Diamond sends me like 4 emails sometimes
one day,
it's and I'm
ridiculous.
Like, I can't do all this.
And then I'm also going to be doing an article called There Are Other Podcasts, where I talk about some of the podcasts I listen to.
Okay.
Yeah. It's mostly going to be people that we know. And like,
I just found a trove of podcast promos in the Twitter. There's like, they've set up a whole thing, Google Drive. So
nice.
That'd be pretty cool.
Very cool.
I don't mind promoting other podcasts.
And then I'm also
shit ton of us.
The ad bump where he's like, where are the bad guys?
Oh, the Pittsburgh guys? Yeah.
I think so.
I don't know.
You actually know them?
No.
I have
not. Just a random ad bump?
Well, we do
we do ad trading.
Yeah. Ad trade, sorry.
Yeah.
And then the last article I'm going to be working on is going to be about different kinds of music that I listen to, because I think I bring it up on the show fairly regularly and people go, what the hell kind of music is that? So I'm going to be putting together a few Spotify playlists with, you know, just 5-6 songs of a specific genre of music and a little bit about each one. And now that I have my computer, I can sit in the living room and work on that stuff and still hang out with
Get
my family.
Some.
So
that's not true. He's just going to look at porn.
That's no. Well, he's still hanging out with heroes.
You know what? If you make that a segment, the porn I'm watching, you'll get like a million hits.
Dude, it's crossed my mind.
Yeah,
it's crossed my
mind. To be fair, he's still hanging out with his family. So.
Yeah, hanging out is right.
Stop.
It's like this.
Hey, no.
It just like, rests comfortably
like,
right on
why
top
do you
of the
have
balls,
your pinky sticking out of your pants.
We're gonna shut that shit down.
Hi, this is Brian Cox, the original Hannibal Lecter, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hello, I'm Megan, and I host Zombie Kitty Podcast. So, what do? Well, I basically ramble about 2 different films twice a week, and then on the last Friday of each month, I do a behind-the-scenes episode. You can find me on SoundCloud and iTunes at Zombie Kitty Podcast, on Twitter, which is at ZKittyPodcast, and on my website, which is zombiekittypodcast.wordpress.com. But I hope to see you all soon. Bye!
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have Ryan Dunleavy. He is the artist on such comics as Action Presidents and Action Philosophers. I just really wanted to say it like that. Sorry. How are you doing this morning, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well. So we kind of start all of our interviews with the same basic question. What's the origin story of X? And for me, I was really interested in what's the origin story of like you becoming a very like kind of cartoony comic book artist? Like, where did your style come from?
Well, actually, I went to when I first started drawing like in earnest when I was a teenager. And when I was in school, art was pretty much the only thing that interested me. And I found out that I could draw, surprisingly, I could draw pretty realistically when I sat down with a subject with photographs. And I was a big fan of science fiction. And the only path like I saw for myself as, for any kind of job at all was doing realistic science fiction artwork, which is stuff that interested me. And then I went to school and I found out I couldn't really do that very well. But I also had like a big interest in, and then I, you know, I met a bunch of guys that were making comic books, like in school at the time. Two of which are now pretty famous, comic book makers. So one is Fred Van Lente and the other is, Steve Ellis, who does a comic called High Moon and another one called, The Only Living Boy. And he was my roommate. But, what happened was as I was, and there were a bunch of other people as well. And as I was seeing all these other people making comics of all sorts of different styles, I was like, you know what? I can actually draw. I could draw realistically, but I couldn't apply those skills. And when I loosened up and I started drawing more cartoony and started drawing on the things that I loved rather than something that I thought was a respectable job, the cartooniness came out when I started like looking at like Looney Tunes cartoons or Mad Magazine or like Tank Girl comics, things like that. It just sort of started to feel more natural. And I just kept going down that path. And my teachers, like, start giving me, you know, grades that didn't suck. And, yeah, that's basically what happened. It just felt easier. And it felt more true rather than something I was trying to force myself to do.
It's always interesting to me to think of art school and having someone grade art because, you know, you have something like a Jackson Pollock that's literally something that I could probably replicate without too much work, but that could get a grade in school. And that's like a really fascinating idea to me. I just,
art school was, I really didn't know what to expect because there was nobody in my background, that was an artist or I graduated high school from Erie, Pennsylvania, which is this tiny little town. And I really was not exposed to art at all. I just had a desire to, a ability to draw and then the desire to do it as a job. And that's what got me, you know, and like I said, no interest in anything else. And that's what got me to college. That's when I met all sorts of people and I started really learning about, you know, the history of art and things like what you just said, you know, like, you know, you can see Jackson Pollock and you can figure out how to do it yourself. But, you know, you don't, that going to art school gave me the education of it, that, you know, about what that means and what, you know, a Pollock means and what the Dada movement means and what, you know, Joseph Campbell's writings mean and all this other stuff that all ties into artwork and, you know, I'm rambling.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's interesting too, because, you know, being interested in the history of the art on top of, of being interested in just the art itself kind of leads to it, you know, in my mind, your comic book history of comics. So when you undertook doing a history of comic books, with Fred Van Lente, you know, how do you approach like such a vast kind of interesting subject as an artist?
Well, what we did was, Fred and I are both, you know, obviously really into comic books and being comic book makers, we already knew a lot about it, but something that, and we each read, different histories on the subject and, you know, there's a, my first big introduction to the history of comics was, this great, documentary film. His name is escaping me. I think it's called, Comic Book Confidential. But what we noticed about, among all these different books that were written about it, was that they really focused in on one type of comic book. Like, even though it said, oh, this is the history of comics, it was really about the history of comic strips, or it was the history of superhero comics, or, you know, what have you. And what we wanted to do is we said, well, let's do one where it's actually the focus on the medium, and we break down the chapters by, you know, all these big innovations that happen. So it was like the first one was basically the invention of comics itself, like how it's what's thought of as modern comics, like, you know, panel-to-panel storytelling. And then the next one was, you know, the different formats that would come out and the different types of genres that were explored. One thing that we did find when doing our research is that, of all people, Jack Kirby seemed to pop up amongst every single one of these movements, at least the ones that happened in his lifetime, which was pretty fun.
Nice. He kind of is like the superhero action figure of comic books.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, I mean, we were fans of him before, and a lot of the research that went into the book came from Fred was trying to write he was actually simultaneously writing a play about Kirby's life called King Kirby. And so a lot of his research from that crossed over into this project as well.
Nice.
We also thought it would be really easy, which was crazy, because, you know, we did a nonfiction comic. We did Action Philosophers when that was wrapping up. We're like, oh, we got to do another funny nonfiction subject. We know everything about comics. Let's just do that. Nobody else has done it. And, you know, of course, I was 6 pages in. I'm just like, this task is going to be impossible, but it'll be fun.
Every time I read a new book that is about the history of comics, I think to myself as I'm picking it up, well, you know, there can't be that much in here that I haven't read about already.
Oh, there's
every
always
time
a ton.
I'm like, holy crap, there's so much awesome stuff in here. So
there's so many people that are passionate about it and that do so much work about it, and then they write these books, and like, you know, everything that one person has found is in there, but then, you know, that just uncovers more layers. So like, oh no, you know, actually, you know, there's somebody that's connected to those stories is going to pop up and right. give you more information. And that's always a fun.
So what is it about doing witty historical comic books that's so attractive to you?
It was, quite honestly, Fred and I did different comics for a while before that. And this was the one that everybody seemed to really like. Was when we did Action Philosophers. More like far and away, it was just immensely popular and was just very gratifying to get the positive feedback of that. Whereas before, I was just writing and drawing sort of underground comics by myself, which was really fun, but it was kind of going nowhere. And Fred was writing various underground comics as well, which actually got him some work at Marvel and whatnot. But it just seemed to be the thing that people really liked. It was almost like we discovered it by accident. And then we found out more things about it, is that, you know, not only is this a really fun thing to do that people really like and we seem to have a knack for, but it's a great way that because it's based on the truth, we can just crack jokes like crazy. And also, in addition to that, it's also a really good teaching tool. So we figured out that we could use it to educate people too. So it was just like this amazing thing that we found, and we just really enjoy doing it.
So when you were doing Action Presidents, like, what is the one like fact or like idea about a president that you came away with and you were like, wow, I had no idea?
I really didn't know much about George Washington when we started doing the book. Fred is really into that whole period of American history. And, I knew a few things about him, but I just didn't realize like how much of a, like early in life, how much of a failure he was, that he basically accidentally started the French and Indian War, you know, before he became, you know, the leader of the American Revolution and our first president. And I always thought that was pretty amazing, just to find out like how fallible all these guys were, before they became, you know, something successful and, you know, did great things for the country.
Like, it's so funny because there's been a meme floating around that's like has the ages of some of the founding fathers when they drafted mm-hmm. the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and stuff. And in my mind, I was like, man, we put these guys up on a pedestal, but really they were just kind of a bunch of dudes. Like,
just to find like all the, you know, the much more human side, especially for these big, larger than life figures.
Yeah. Like, definitely successful, definitely, like, intelligent, but there's that moment where you're like, wow, that guy was kind of a jerk, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, yeah.
So when you're approaching doing something, like, historical, you know, you're drawing somebody like George Washington, who has, like, a very, mm-hmm. like, kind of
standard visual like presentation in American media. Like, as a cartoonist, how do you approach taking somebody that's like a real person and kind of converting them to like your style of art?
Well, what I actually did was I kind of cheated, is that after reading Fred's scripts, I started thinking of famous cartoonist styles and like what kind of characters if George Washington was a cartoon or a comic book character, you know, who would be the best artist to do it? And that's what I've done for all of them. So George Washington is actually a Bruce Timm character, in a Batman, the Animated Series type character. And Abraham Lincoln is a Mad Magazine character, because he's just sort of gawky and goofy.
Yeah.
yeah. And Teddy Roosevelt, which I'm just wrapping up the last page on today, is a Jack Kirby character, because nice. He's just sort of big, thick, larger than life. Still haven't quite zeroed in on JFK. He's going to be the fourth book. So I'm thinking like sort of a 60s, like Milton Caniff type guy.
That's awesome. So going from having, in your youth and stuff, drawing, realistic things, and then, starting to get into the comics and starting to get, your own style, like the breadth of the things that you've drawn. And like, you see this in big time in, total brain, comic book history of comics, like where you're capable of drawing very different styles of art. Is that a huge benefit for you when you go into drawing comic books?
It's something that I've abandoned recently. It was something that I did I kind of did it in the middle of doing the comic book history of comics. I had this great idea of like, oh, I'm going to just draw, when I'm drawing the Mad Magazine section, it's going to look like a Mad comic. Or when I draw Winsor McKay, it's going to look like a Winsor McKay page. And when I was drawing comic book history of comics, when I started drawing the Winsor McKay sequence specifically, I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I'm never going to get this done. I had to, it's kind of a trick that I abandoned a while back. I used to do it for Wizard Magazine. I figured, I really have to push forward and let my own personality, my own style come through in everything that I do. Otherwise it's going to take forever.
So I had seen that you had done some illustration for Wizard, and it made me think about just kind of how there isn't a vehicle like Wizard used to be, that idea of here's a bunch of articles about comic books and then also like kind of trending hot comic books. Do you think that's something that it's okay that it's gone, or is that something that you kind of miss a little bit?
It's magazines are fun, but I think, the internet has really replaced it. It's just been sort of, splintered and pushed across. You can still find that stuff. It's just not quite as curated as it was before. And they don't hire illustrators to do, cool stuff, to illustrate their ideas. But yeah, it seems like there's lots of stuff on the internet that's sort of filled that void, for better or for worse. I mean, is that something you feel like is that something you miss? Like, that kind of thing?
I really do. Like I miss the whole idea of being able to pick up a comic book at the newsstand. Like that idea that I'm at the grocery store and here's this comic book that maybe I've never read before, but it's, a buck, so I pick it up. Kind of thing. But I also, my introduction to comic books was through things like Wizard, or just going to the bookstore and sitting down and reading all their comic books and going home, that kind of stuff. So it's just personally, it's something that I think I miss because of the availability. And while I understand the internet and being able to buy comics on the internet and stuff, I feel like most people intentionally seek that out as opposed to having it right in their face and taking a chance on it,
Mm-hmm.
I miss the old things because I'm old.
Yeah, I'm old too. I don't know. I miss those things, but also it's something I kind of left in the past as well. And I have no idea how people discover stuff now in early, the kind of things that I was into in 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens now. I actually had that mental conversation with myself. You know, I find everything new on Facebook or, you know, on Instagram or whatever. How is it that I used to go about finding things? It's like, well, I would buy, you know, metal and, you know, heavy metal magazines and comic books at the newsstand, and I would read the light.
Well, honestly, I mean, I always found out through friends, you know, that's how I always discovered stuff. I mean, once in a while, it'd be like, you know, wander in the comic store and pull something off the shelves, and it becomes your most favorite thing ever. But it was usually somebody saying like, oh my God, have you ever seen, you know, Sam and Max comics or fill in the blank.
Right.
And, you know, then it becomes like something that I love. And it's still there, you know. I'm getting it on the Twitter feed rather than, you know,
somebody telling
rather you than like rather than walking DMX. To class or yeah, exactly.
When you know when you look at, because you do a lot of convention stuff, like, you know, I see that you go to a lot of conventions, you meet a lot of people. Like, how do you feel like the comic book industry and like kind of in a broader sense, like the pop culture industry is right now? Do you think it's kind of I mean, I hate to say golden era, but it seems like it's a very...
I don't think...
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think it is. I mean, I've never been somebody that like really gravitated towards things that were popular. And it's kind of strange seeing things that, you know, I got made fun of liking when I was 14, the, like, you know, have these big conventions and, you know, there's... I'm taking my kids to, you know, there's going to be a movie, you know, there's a Black Panther movie and I'm going to take my kids to it this weekend. And like, it's kind of a strange world, but it doesn't, I don't know. It's a big question.
You know, for me, it feels so.
I actually haven't been to that many conventions in the last couple of years.
Oh,
I kind of dropped off. It's okay.
It's funny because I think the last couple...
I don't expect people to keep track of my every...
Oh, no, it's funny because I think the last couple Denvers you were at, and so in my brain that equals he's at all sorts of conventions.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because
Denver was great. Actually, the last one was the first one I've been to, Denver, nice. And that was awesome. They do a great convention.
That's
really,
kind of our...
Really,
our,
really pleased to be there.
That's our, like, home-based convention.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, New York Comic Con is my home base. But it's right over the. It's like a 20-minute subway ride from my house. I always go there.
That would be awesome to have. Like, I don't know. I'm always really envious of like people that live in that part of the country because in my mind everything is 5 minutes away. Like, literally anything amazing that you could possibly imagine.
It's not that close. I mean, it's kind of strange. Just, you know. You don't have friends in other... There's five boroughs. You don't have friends in other boroughs. They're all, like, in your local area. When my wife and I were first started dating, she lived in Queens, and I live in Brooklyn. And I'm just like, oh, my God, how are we going to make this work? But it worked out.
That's awesome.
She had to move here. That's what happened. That's basically what happened.
One of us has to move. So, Ryan, what kind of stuff are you working on now that people can look out for?
Well, the Action President series, the first two books are out, and they're in bookstores everywhere. They're aimed at, like, fifth grade reading level, but they truly are for all ages, a lot like a Looney Tunes cartoon. And I just wrapped up the second book, and the fourth book is JFK, and that'll be out. Those other two books will be out this year as well. They're 120-page graphic novels. That's the main thing I'm focusing on right now.
And they are a blast. Like,
oh, thanks.
I was a huge fan of Action Philosopher's comic book history of comics. Is when people ask me, you know, hey, how can I find out more about the history of comics? That's one of the first books I recommend because it's so, like, it's so concise and like ridiculously entertaining on top of it. So, like,
it's been a lot of fun. I've been really happy that, I mean, we originally did that book about 10 years ago. And then a couple of years ago, IDW decided that they wanted to reprint it in color for us. And this terrific colorist, Adam Gazowski, has been doing an amazing job. We're finishing up the second trade paperback right now, and that'll be out in July. So that'll be the entire thing. There's the first book, which came out a couple months ago, and then the second book will be done pretty soon.
That's so cool. like,
and we did a whole bunch of new material for it too.
Yeah, which I really, really loved because, like I said, I got it when it was first coming out, when it first came out, the black and white one. I was like, man, this is super, super cool. And then when you talked about in the release of the next one for color, how you were going to add more material, it's like, yes, even more history. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Awesome. The last one, we even went even further. I mean, it used to be, we just did like one or two pages, but the last issue we revamped almost the entire thing. So, even if you read the first book, the fourth and the last issue, which I think comes out in a week or two, has completely new stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just because time's changed. We finished the original book in 2012, and things have changed. You know, the comic book industry has gone through some changes since then, particularly the rise of young adult graphic novels as being, you know, one of the sales leaders that people in the comic industry keep ignoring.
those young adults, they make people a lot of money in novels and movies and music, and comic books definitely can't miss that boat.
Exactly. Well, they haven't, you know, it's just, but I mean, there's some segments of the industry that, you know, have had their head in the sand over it. And, it's, you know, it's a shame.
It truly is. And Ryan, how can people find you like online to, you know, maybe keep track of what conventions you do or don't go to, so they don't sound like they're interviewing you.
Yeah, that's okay. No, I'm pretty bad at, like, you know, promoting those types of things, maybe because I don't have them. I've been so busy drawing. But the best way to find out anything about me is through my website, which is my name, Ryan Dunlavey, DUNLAVEY.com. That's my handle on Twitter. That's my handle on Instagram. Although there's another Ryan Dunlavey who won't give up. There's another Ryan Dunlavey on Instagram who got there before me. So my name's a little different. But other than that, yeah, those are the places to find me.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. We really enjoyed talking with you about comic books and your art and just your approach to the amazing history of philosophers, presidents, and comic books.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Well, we're going to be doing more. I don't know what's happening after presidents, but probably, you know, Fred and I are just going to stick together and keep making these nonfiction comics until, you know, one of us dies, I guess.
You should do funny takes on world dictators.
Oh, well, you know.
No, don't do that. That's a terrible idea.
It could work.
Nice.
We're thinking mythology. Maybe.
Oh, that'd be really cool. That'd be really, yeah. Really cool. Like each book being about a different brand of mythology,
sure.
For lack of a better term.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, different pantheon. Oh, that's one idea. We've got a bunch of different ideas, but that's the one that's sort of leading the pack right now. We'll see what happens.
If you do mythology, I'm definitely in on that one. That sounds
cool.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Ryan.
All right, thanks,
really
Gabe.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Gabe. I appreciate you calling me.
Hi, I'm Gina Winbrandt, author of Someone Please Have Sex With Me, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
I gotta say, after long night fighting crime, there's only one thing to do. Listen to Geek Yogurt. It's got all the factual information you need about serious heroes like me, your friendly neighborhood Spider Knight. Listen to us. We're on iTunes. We're on some other sites. We're on Facebook. //. It doesn't matter. /. Geek Yogurt. We're also on Twitter. Yogurt Podcast. Do it. Alfred will be pleased.
And we're back.
Talking about Bailey's asshole.
Dude,
burn.
Why are you fucking with the mic?
I don't know.
Today?
I don't know.
You're so high. Just calm
Buddy,
down.
Buddy, just stand still. Right there is perfect spot.
It's hard to do it when you tell me to do it.
It's a weed that's chill.
I was chill.
Oh, that was good. That was good. Yeah. Oh, man.
I had to make sure we were recording.
Make sure we're recording, of course. That was not a funny joke, by the way.
No.
When you came down here and looked at the recorder, like Jonathan Blackshire and I had not been recording for the last 45 minutes. That went long, but that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it went very long, and you were very loud.
You're very loud.
I heard you yell something, and I was like, what? Who's he yelling at down there? I thought it sounded angry.
I I am anticipating my first hostile interview someday. I can't wait for that. It'll be amazing.
Oh, my God.
Well, people just heard the trailer to Conan the Barbarian, because that's the section we're in.
We are in our pop culture classic. So let's talk about 1982's Conan the Barbarian. I had to pull this up.
They're all sluts.
I forgot to write it down. Directed by John Milus. I'm not sure how to say his name. Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Earl Jones and a bunch of ladies' boobs.
Does it really star James Earl Jones, you think?
Yeah.
He's always a star.
He's a super important part of the movie.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Gabe, before we get into this, what are the best things in life?
Well, the best things in life are to crush your enemies.
Right.
To see them fleeing before you.
Driven.
Same difference.
Yeah.
And to hear the lamentations of their women.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those are the best things in life.
Yeah.
This is good.
And weed.
So, oh my gosh, what is going on over there?
Don't touch things, Doyle.
I didn't do it.
Doyle, stop touching the mic.
No, Juan did that.
The more and more I move it closer to your face, the more and more you keep doing this.
You remember that?
Dude, it's like you're paranoid when you're high, and then this black dick is just coming at you the whole time.
So, had a fun experience. I don't know if the mic picked up Mel, because she was kind of quiet and just said it to me, but as we were watching the movie last night, you know, Arnold gets in his first fight. There's not a ton of talking in the very beginning of this movie, but Arnold,
or the movie at all.
Arnold gets in this first fight. And Bailey goes, "Wow, that guy sounds a lot like Arnold Schwarzenegger." I was like, "That's because it is Arnold Schwarzenegger." He is incredibly young in this movie.
Sluts.
They're all sluts.
He had just done that like porn thing. We tried to figure it out last night. Yeah.
What?
Arnold Schwarzenegger did porn like before he became a movie actor.
Like gay porn.
There you go again.
What?
Get closer.
Get closer to the mic.
I'm making sure that I talk loud when I say it.
Make love to the mic.
Yes, make love to the mic, bro. You don't have to sit.
All right, I'm here, people.
For your racist delight.
Let's get shit on the road.
I shit in bags. I say racist shit.
Hey, God hooks them up with widescreen vision, and I'm the asshole. What the fuck?
So.
You definitely should not get weeded. Definitely should not. You need to find a better way to heal your back.
Definitely crack, I'm thinking. Lose weight.
You know, I'm experimenting.
Lose weight.
I'm experimenting, right?
So
we went a little too deep today. A little too deep?
Ooh.
We don't want to back up next time.
Bag that ass up.
Yeah. I'll lose some fruit pebbles for next time.
Jesus.
So,
Conan the Barbarian. The actual topic of this conversation.
Yes.
So, this movie is distinctly different from Conan the Destroyer, like, which was dumbed down to make it more palatable for like a kind of PG-13 audience, so the kids could go see it to kind of capitalize on the Marvel comic books, right?
Yeah.
This version of Conan is a lot closer to, you know, Conan the Barbarian as written by Robert Howard, like in the short stories, in the weird tales before, like in that pulp era of fiction before Marvel started serializing it as comic books. And even the Marvel comic books are very much so, you know, they're pretty intense through about issue like 15 or 16. And then they start to kind of chill it out in the regular comic books. And then they come out with Savage Sword of Conan, which is the more intense version of it. Like, so when you have you guys seen Conan the Destroyer before? Mm-hmm. So
or, I may have. It's just been fucking for years if I
so
have.
Like when you went into this movie, because I know how I feel about this movie. This is like one of my favorite movies ever.
Indeed.
Which is weird.
When you
I can see your boner from here, sir.
I know.
Wait, you like Conan?
That's my boner. So when you
authoritative it was.
When you watched this, was it what you were expecting?
Yeah. Because it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. It's exactly what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like an Arnold movie, really.
I did. I felt like definitely an early Arnold movie, for sure.
Limited plot. Limited
yeah, he didn't fucking
else,
talk.
But action.
Story how line. Much of this movie...
There was hardly any storyline.
Oh, I mean, hardly any. If it wasn't for the cutscenes, this movie would be 15 minutes long.
Just, yeah, if it's not
let's
for
Let's fucking
his...
run! Let's dude, do a montage of me nailed to a tree. You don't move, Gabe. You don't need a montage.
And then he headbutts a fucking bird.
That was awesome.
No, he bites he eats the bird. He eats the bird.
For
and if you read the books,
and then
he
dies
drinks
laughing.
Its blood.
Yeah. It just wasn't a good. So, did I enjoy it? I enjoyed it. I like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Was it a good movie? Probably not.
I was going somewhere.
It wasn't. I don't think so.
So, you know, remember the first Rocky where he's shooting the commercial? Or the second one?
Yeah. No, is it the second one?
Yeah, because it's after.
They put the fucking shit on his face.
And he can't read. He's like retarded. And the guy's getting all fucking pissed off at him. I wonder if Arnold was like that in this movie. Because most of the fucking movie is not them talking on screen. Most of it's them sitting in a sound room. And you're not watching the face when you hear the dialogue. I noticed that last night. Like, a lot of times they're fucking talking.
When
but
he's talking, his back is to the camera
backs
and stuff.
They're not fucking there. Like, I wonder how many takes there are for each scene in this movie with dialogue.
When he gets to the, when he gets to the wizard and he talks to the wizard, yeah. Alicia's like, was that the first fucking thing he said through this whole stupid movie? I was like, I don't think so. I think he said a few other little things back there.
He said a sentence here.
Yeah,
there,
he doesn't talk very much in the whole movie.
Does the city always smell like this?
Yeah.
And then,
no, that's off-screen, too.
And then he punches a donkey out cold.
Yeah, a camel. He punches a camel.
He donkey punches.
He also has his best line in the movie where the girls are like, come sleep with me so that you can have this protected omen. And he's all, they're all sluts. Which is an amazing line.
It was just weird. He kicks a rat. Movie. He slept with the witch lady, and then I thought she was going to turn into, like, a vampire or something, and then she exploded everywhere. It was weird.
His whole sexual career is weird. It's like, let's rape this bitch in front of other people. Step one. Step two, I'm going to fuck what's clearly not okay to fuck. And while I'm fucking it, it's demoning out, and I'm not stopping until it literally starts biting my fucking neck. And he throws her in a fire. She laughs, flies away. The third time was the only, like, consensual sex between two adult male and female people. The rest of it was either rape.
Two human male and female people.
That's true. Can't separate them. Can't separate the words.
Is it still bestiality? No.
No.
What is she like a witch or is she like a demon or something?
She's like, or she's supposed to be, I think, like a succubus. Like, kind of like a.
Oh, because she can answer his secret, but he has to, like, break her off.
Yeah.
And then she freaks out, so it's.
He has to break off inside her?
No, you could tell. You got her. She was good. And then she was like, now I'm going to kill you.
I was like, that's the risk. This movie's graphic.
That's the risk.
So. What's weird about it is, as a fan, like one might even say, like a super fan of Conan,
sure.
Having read like a lot of the books and not just like the comic books, like but the actual short stories and stuff, it feels so much like those, like this weird segmented. He goes from like adventure to adventure to adventure, and there's like sort of an overarching story of him eventually coming to like. You know, Thulsa Doon and fighting Thulsa Doon and all that stuff. But this moment of, you know, he's in the slave pits fighting. Or like, or even before that, you know, he's turning the grain grinder.
Man, and that scene was long.
Yeah, it is really long. Whew, he's in the slave pits fighting. You know, he gets his freedom and he ends up in the king's, you know, the king's tomb. And then he ends up with the witch. And then he, you know, ascends the Tower of Serpents to steal the gem and fight the giant snake. Like, that's each one of those segments is like one of a Conan short story or like an issue of Conan. So it was kind of, for me, it's really, really cool because it really exemplifies exactly how Conan is in the comic books and in the books. Whereas, like, the other Conan stuff, like the new one with Jason Momoa, it's great, but it's just one story.
I think that made a lot of money, too.
Yeah, it's just, like, that one...
It doesn't cost that much money to make, you know?
Yeah.
That was a good Conan. I like that one.
We did have a moment where Tim and I were watching it where we realized that's a lot of people. Like, the set cult, when they're climbing up the tower, that's a shitload of extras, and that's not CGI. Like, it's just a totally...
White people.
Yeah.
An Asian area. In fact, the only two Asians in this movie are a thief and a crazy old wizard.
Played by Mako, who has the most amazing voice of all time.
Is an awesome character, but I found that to be highly racist, and I liked it. And
wow.
And even, you know, you get to James Earl Jones, he's the bad guy. How can you go bad? Black. You know, like black dude.
Let's talk about his hair for a second.
His, fuck
like,
yes.
Mean, like, mullet bowl cut.
Dude. Bailey, like, literally 2 seconds into seeing his face, just goes, those fucking bangs.
Maybe
what
he's emo.
Shit. Maybe he's evil.
Yeah, don't stop judging.
You can't talk if you're not on the microphone.
And stop judging. Fucking judgy.
I agree, though. She's not the only one with bad hair. Arnold's hair doesn't look very good in this movie.
Yeah, nobody's hair looks good.
Everybody's hair was pretty terrible.
We were talking about it with me and Alicia. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's. I was like, that's. I can definitely tell how young Arnold looks in this movie. And she's like, where's Arnold? And I was like, he's the one fighting the fucking giant snake. She's like, no, that guy has long hair. And I was like, yeah, of course, it goes with the movie. But she didn't believe it was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
How can you not believe that? Literally the first dude he fights, he's all, like in Arnold Schwarzenegger voice.
Trying to break his arm. Why is it a chopper?
I really want a master cut of like somebody just clip all of Arnold's like laws into like a 10,
exists.
20
I know
minute.
I've heard it before.
Like I really want to hear that from like all of
it was super like super fucking long too.
It is a very, very long movie.
I think that's what
the
makes
books, how do you write the monologues for the or the running scenes and shit that was
in the books
so much of this
that,
movie
that's not as prevalent in the books, but I think I do think it's kind of cool that they do the. They run everywhere because that's kind of that's in the comic books in the sense that Conan is very, very athletic and can keep up with like a guy on his horse, like for an extended period of time.
Or
that happens.
An Asian.
You know what? So you know what? The one thing that bums me out in the transition from book to movie, and this is the dumbest thing. So Conan is from the Sumerian tribe, okay? And the Sumerians are like a cliff-dwelling people. And so they grow up their whole lives learning how to climb the cliffs of these mountains, right? So in the stories and in the comic books, Conan is an exceptional thief because he can literally climb up anything, right? But so the Tower of Serpents in the comic book, Conan does that all by himself. He just goes in, steals the gem, fights the snake, and I think it's an elephant in the comic book. But he does it all by himself because he can just climb up, get the thing, climb back down, right? In the movie, because it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, they can't show him being nimble because he's just not nimble, and it bums me out that like that brand of Conan's athleticism is lost. Like
also, who put the fucking rope up when they climbed the snake tower?
No, the Asian guy does.
Does he?
The Asian guy pickaxes his way to the top and then they have the rope down.
I did not see that part.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of nipples.
There are a lot of see-through lace-like materials. Yeah. A lot of side boob shots.
It's pretty much
girl wearing a weird diaper thing.
That was
very unbecoming of that.
Are you
that
not
was
into
a weird
diapers?
Outfit.
Women in diapers?
No.
Is that your thing?
No.
Oh. I think we've established that maybe Doyle's thing.
It's not, folks.
No, it would be different if it was like a trash bag wrapped around.
Yes.
Yeah.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
It definitely needs to be. It definitely. And it could have been way shorter. It was too long.
Oh, an hour and a half off.
Yeah, it's way too long.
I think just in montages alone.
Because it's like a 2.5 hour long
it's
movie.
It's fucking long. Yeah. Alicia was like, when does this fucking movie end? I want to go to sleep. Like well, it's.
You should have been like, you can go to sleep whenever.
It,
you don't
really,
have to watch
does,
this.
It
we like to go.
Said
no, we like to go to sleep together.
It is a pretty anticlimactic movie, like unfortunately. It has its flaws, but I still love it. And I think part of it is I love it because it's my fandom, you
right,
know?
Right.
Some people are Whovians, some people are really into Star Wars or Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I love fucking Conan, so.
You love fucking Conan?
Dude, yeah. You would yes. not believe.
He couldn't fuck Conan.
I would.
Conan would flex his butt cheeks, bro.
Break his dick off.
Yeah.
So what do we say, Doyle? Thumbs up, thumbs middle, thumbs down?
The movie overall, I think, still a thumbs up. It still has, like, any weaknesses it has is, like, covered up by nostalgia, pretty much. And it is, like, a full, complete story, which I like. Like, you don't have to tell more stories, but if more stories come, like, I enjoy that. I talked a little bit about that in, like, the mind management interview. Like, it's cool that, like, he made a 6-issue comic. He didn't know if it was going to take off, so he wrapped that up.
Right.
And if it takes off, awesome. If not, oh well. And I feel like Conan did the exact same thing where it's, like, it's very linear. You know, his mom's head gets chopped off, and then he kills the guy who killed his mom by chopping his head off. And, like, the whole story just, like, packages itself up and wraps itself up. And it's like, we might do more.
We might not.
We might not do more.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they did more. And
yeah, and the second one was terrible.
But yeah, I liked it overall. I think it was good.
How about you?
Thumbs up. I think what saved it for me was the practical effects. Because I feel like that movie now with all kind of CGI would suck.
Oh, yeah.
It would be like too much to like recreate that.
Wouldn't it just be the big snake?
All the people. All the people. Sets,
oh, yeah, they wouldn't have done the thing with that many people. You're right.
The sets would be very different. Like,
it would have been like the second 300 movie where it's like, you know, they're on green screen because none of that shit exists in real life. And it just would have taken you out of it.
How about you, Juan?
I have no nostalgia for this movie at all. I'm going to go thumbs middle because I like Arnold. That's pretty much it. It was cool. I like the gore factor. I could care less for the tit factor about this movie, but the gore factor was pretty cool for its time. It was pretty cool.
You like tits?
There's tits everywhere. I don't need to see them in 1982. Where?
Did you have a pair? Shut up.
Yeah, wow. But they're not the ones I like.
Hairier than I prefer.
It's just not. It's
more pointy.
Like I said, I don't think it's a good movie. It sounds like the biggest thing is nostalgia purpose. That's the biggest thing that you guys love about the movie is that you have good feelings for it, and I have none of those feelings for this movie. So
that's
shit.
So that's partially me and partially not me. Like I understand that I'm a giant fan of Conan, and as a consequence, I'm predispositioned to like this movie.
Right.
What?
But cinematography wise, like I really genuinely think this movie is a movie that they just don't make anymore. They don't make movies with huge casts like that.
They shot
with huge amazing sets like that. And
they shot Lord of the Rings a lot like they shot this movie.
But they didn't.
It felt to me like
they would have like 20-30 people and then like in post.
No. If you watch the making of this, it's a lot more than that. Even the Horseman scene, they had like 200 extras.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, crazy to me. But Lord of the Rings, again, is like a movie that I fucking love because of its epic nature, you know?
Well, that's what I was saying, is I think like they don't do movies like that, and then obviously I think movies like that still work, is what I was saying.
Absolutely.
Because you have it in that example.
I think a movie like this could be rebooted more as this movie, like as that kind of segmented story where these different adventures are happening under the auspices of an overarching plot, it could be done way better now.
I just don't think people have the patience for four different stories in one movie.
Which bums me out because it's just, for me, it's just a really well-made movie. Like it's not... I mean, honestly, the worst part of it is Arnold Schwarzenegger's acting. Like, you know, he's... It's funny and it's fun to watch, but like, you know, but yeah. Conan is supposed to be intelligent. Like he's well spoken and he's intelligent. He's not necessarily like super smart.
I don't know how intelligent Conan was. He barely spoke in the movie.
We're told that's what I'm saying. That he's intelligent.
We're told that he's intelligent because he reads from the scrolls and he knows philosophy and he knows poetry and all this other stuff, but they don't. They just don't go off of that the way they do in the book.
I think that's the problem with having two or three adventure stories in a movie is you can't develop that.
So this
just
is
make
what
a sequel.
This is what excites me about Amazon's Conan the Barbarian TV show.
Or make a TV show.
Is it real?
There you go.
I've heard that it's happening. So like because of the way the stories were written originally by Robert Howard, they were in issues of magazines, and they were like, you know, 8 or 9 page short stories that were self-contained but told over the course like an overarching story, and I think that works really well for TV and not so great for
Hercules
movies. Hercules is
fucking perfect example of that.
Beastmaster, slightly less perfect example of that.
Well, I mean, Xena was the same. It's the same thing. You know, you know that Hera and all them are out there, and sometimes each episode will deal a little bit with that, but it's mostly just
a Monster of the Week
kind of show, and it worked.
And I love it. I can't wait to... I can't wait
That's
for that
who she
happen.
Thought it was. She's like, that looks like the guy from Hercules. And I was like, no, that's Kevin Sorbo. It's a different guy. I don't think Kevin Sorbo was ever quite as jacked as fucking Arnold Schwarzenegger. I was like, I think this is the peak of Arnold Schwarzenegger's steroid use, probably.
I don't know, man. He looks
this
more
is right
jacked
around
now
the time where
he's
going like, lifting is like coming to
he's
me.
He's like a flab now.
Yeah, he's flabby.
Maybe I'm thinking of Stallone looks like
he's
crazy.
Fucking gargantuan.
No, see, like, Arnold is flabby because some of the muscle's gone and the skin's still stretchy.
Right.
It's not because he's like big. But yeah, Stallone is still like steroids jacked.
But I mean, Arnold has said that he used steroids because nobody cared. It wasn't a thing back then.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I think in general we all have a good opinion, so we can all be friends.
I'd watch it. It wasn't terrible. Like I said, I like that. Anytime I'm going into the 1980s or some shit, and it's especially an Arnold movie, I know what I'm like. You did with whatever you're gonna watch. All right, see you later, everybody. I'm just kidding. All right, what are we watching next? Who's up? Is it him?
Yeah, it's near. Isn't it me?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, it's Near Dark.
Yeah, we're watching.
Which
Near
one
Dark.
Is that one?
It's the vampire one.
Oh, okay, I don't.
The 80s remember. Vampire Bill Paxton movie.
It's really.
Oh, okay.
I think you're really going to enjoy it. The fact that you just said I really appreciate the gore in this movie leads me to believe that you're going to like Near Dark quite a bit.
Shit! He cut his head. Holy
shit!
And
then what was our choice after that? Do we remember?
It was. I think it's Jason. I don't think we're doing us every other time. Remember, we established this the last time.
I know. I'm.
But we're not because I'm me separated from
us,
you.
And then you, and then Jason, and then us again.
Even though technically,
I don't think Jason had chosen. I don't think he had chosen last time.
I'm just making sure I don't have it written down.
So I would like to make a request for after Jason.
Okay.
I would like to watch Have the Gods Gone Crazy.
Is that what it's called? The Gods Must... I think it's...
The Gods Must Be Crazy. That's fine. That's fine.
You act like you don't want me to be racist on the show.
Yeah.
Just watch the movie where, like, the first 20 minutes of it are simple black people playing with bottles.
Simple black people. Wow.
They're pretty fucking simple.
That's a pretty accurate assessment of the first 20 minutes of that movie, just so you know.
I love that movie. That's cool. Yeah. The second one's good, too.
It is really good. I actually liked the second one better when I was a kid.
What?
When I was a kid. Because
it's good, though. They're both good.
The second one is way more slapsticky than the first one was. And when you're a little kid, like, people falling down is way funnier than people saying funny things. So we'll reach out to Jason for the movie or whatever he chooses for us after Near Dark, and then Gods Must Be Crazy. So right now it's Near Dark. We don't know.
Something.
The Gods Must Be Crazy. So
Juan must be crazy.
God, that would be amazing.
It wouldn't. That sounds awful. You'd be like, podcast every day.
No way. We wouldn't have the need. Well, we wouldn't. I don't know about the rest of the world, but we wouldn't need money. Should that be amazing?
That would be amazing. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back with some old man picks.
Something.
I guess I'm the only old man picker. And then
we talked about John not wanting to be on the show anymore. So I don't know what's going on. I have no idea. It's just something that I say.
John, come
it's
back.
It's like
to
that
us.
Time when your mom shoots your first dog in the face with a shotgun because it has cancer.
Sure.
What?
It's really sad.
The fuck is he talking about?
It's a sad moment.
My
mom did that once.
Your mom did that?
She
shot you in the face?
No, dude.
She shot his dog in the face.
Oh, okay. I'm resilient, bro. I'm pretty cool, but...
I didn't hear the dog part.
In the bag, but I can't get shot in the face.
I didn't hear the dog part.
Yeah, dude, our dog got cancer. They're like, we gotta put it down.
See how fast you talk, though? I almost didn't hear the dog part again.
I was saying it was sad. Yeah, I hope so.
The dog shot in the face.
I can't see how fast I'm talking, mom, because I can't see my lips.
Wow.
But,
oh, shit. That's like from Bad Boy.
It was too expensive to put the dog down. So she was like, well, I'm going to shoot it. And that makes sense to me as an adult, actually. Because it's like the same thing. It's dying really fast. I don't know if it's humane. Either way, you're killing it. But she goes out there. I'm fucking like 7. She should be like, hey, don't watch me shoot your dog in the face with a shotgun. So I'm like looking through the window and just like, because you're murdered. And it stuck with me.
And then, I can't imagine why that would stick with you.
Do you think she would like for us to regale her with this past story?
I think she actually doesn't even have it.
That's how most Mexican moms act.
I recall the police coming.
I never hit you, mijo. Stop exaggerating.
I recall the police coming and her berating the officer to the point where he left. We were in Platteville. She's like, come tell me I can't fire my gun. I'm a goddamn robber. I was like, oh, okay.
I'm going to get out of here before you shoot me in the face.
We're past the statute of limitations, I think, so we can talk about it again.
Yeah. It was weird, man.
Dog murder is not illegal, I don't think, either.
I think it is.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah,
it is that way.
I think if you actually did that, you'd be...
But I think, like I said, I'm sure they can only prosecute you for so much amount of time.
25 years ago, you could fucking do that to a dog.
Right now, there's a lawyer doing math.
Doyle D.
I guess it's not that sad if John left the show, but I mean, it is, but.
Wow. How did we get back on that subject again?
That's what I was comparing to. It was sad.
Oh, he was saying if John leaves the show, it would bring him as much sadness as when his mom shot his dog.
I never know what John feels. I don't. He's not. He doesn't ever talk. Like, he's not a talker. So I
need you to open up.
We love you, John.
Yeah. 2 weeks from now, it's going to
maybe he's scared we're going to actually make him get a tattoo.
I think that's it. I think that's what he's afraid of. Are you getting the tattoo? I'm getting the tattoo.
You should do the next show like an intervention because that would be hilarious.
He doesn't do well with surprises. I think he'd just get angry.
As if it was even a joke, like it's not real.
He doesn't like funny things. Yeah. You should know that by now. That's true.
This is Ben Wander, creator of A Case of Distrust, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Everybody, it's Clyde from the Old Still Radio Show, and this is why you need to listen to us. Number one, we may not be the biggest podcast out there.
I like being the underdog.
But we are one of the best.
It's magic. Yeah. It really is.
Secondly, we have a southern charm, and we tend to make a lot of sense.
I mean, he can't molest anybody when he's dead.
Right. And I hate to tell you people, we're pretty fucking funny.
Is that hilarious?
Yeah. But let's not forget about our most important part, the weather girl.
Never talked about the weather. You're the weather girl. Nope.
That's sugar tits for those who don't know.
Not hilarious. Welcome. That's going to get you cut.
So if you haven't gotten a feel for it, this is what the show is like, and we invite you guys to come out and check us out. We are the Old Still Radio Show with number two, Preach, Clyde, and Sugar Tits. Find us at www.oldstillradioshow.com or on Facebook at Old Still Radio Show or on Twitter at Old Still Radio. And, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. So, yo, come on out and check out the Old Still Radio Show. We guarantee you're going to have a good time.
The melodica is that keyboard that you blow into, and it sounds kind of like a harmonica.
Oh, those things are really cool. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Nice. Right. So if I know anything about your show and anything about Juan, we're already recording.
That is correct.
Okay. And we're back.
Okay. So we talked about this very briefly, but we're going to go back and forth asking questions. Before we do that, we should introduce the segment where you introduce the segment and then I introduce the segment.
Oh, this is getting way too meta now. So I'd like to welcome everybody into a special interview segment on the Lamp Show, because this is the Lamp Show right now and not the Old Still Radio Time Hour show. Right? Is this Clyde?
No, this is not Clyde. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have Jonathan Blackshire with the Lamp Show. He's talking with Thinking Outside the Long Box. He must have taken a little too many shots to the head and too much moonshine when he invaded the old-timey Still Radio Hour show with Clyde John Still.
I was told this was going to be an interview with Clyde. I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, I beat him up and took over his show.
He gave me the phone number to call in. He said, "Hey, guys, call in to this show right here." That's the worst Clyde impression ever.
That's a pretty bad Clyde impression.
So that's what I said. But I guess I'll have to, I'll just have to talk to you guys instead, which is fine, because I wanted to talk to you anyways. So what's happening here is, I guess, since I do a show and you guys do a show, I figured I was going to flip the script a little bit here and ask you some questions. I was going to ask Clyde some questions, but I guess I'll ask them to you, Gabe, if that's all right.
I guess. I mean, as long as they don't revolve around how to distill moonshine, I think I probably have the answers.
Well, I mean, if we talked about how to different strains of marijuana, would that be better? Or
oh, yeah, I can definitely talk about that.
Okay, well, that's one of my questions. I'll leave it for later, though. So one thing that you do on your show, which I thought would be appropriate, my show is obviously it's a music-based show. We kind of do a long-form talk format, and we also do some live performances of music on the show. But I'd like to kind of stick to your guys' format here. And my first question would be for you, Gabe. What's your origin story of your appreciation for music, of just, you know, your first awareness of music and how it affected you?
So I grew up in like a really strange musical household. My mom was definitely NPR / Barbara Streisand. So there's nice. A lot of show tunes and classical music coming from my mom. But my dad Sweet. Was definitely like Beatles, psychedelic rock. So my dad would get home from work, and this when he still drank, he would plop down in his easy chair and he would get a nice. Beer nice. And he would pop on Santana's Abraxas album, and he would just like listen to the whole album. And I remember I would just like lay on the floor and like stare at the album jacket and try to imagine how the music
tied into it.
And it made no sense because it's like this crazy, like fantasy,
random
art,
psychedelic,
like, yeah, like demon boob lady. And I was like, man, this is fucking crazy. Like, I don't understand any of this. And
that's awesome. About how old were you at this time?
Oh, man, this was like 4 or 5 years old, you know, just
wow.
Just literally laying on the floor, staring at a Santana album, trying to figure out how it related to the music. And, you know, as I got older, my parents got divorced pretty early. And, you know, right. So at my mom's house, it was just classical music almost all the time.
Right.
At my dad's house, you know, every time we got in the car, it was the local classic rock station. My dad would
sure,
be
right.
singing AC/DC with me, you know. And so it really all started with my parents. Like, it was a big, you know, I mean, and now, even now, my music taste is ridiculously eclectic. Like, I don't listen to anything that regular people listen to because I, you know, like, who wants to listen to Taylor Swift? Like, that's garbage music.
Hey now. I love my Taylor Swift, all right?
You know,
I'm going to shake that off, Gabe.
You know,
all right?
I feel like this is a good part for me to say. My first question for you is, really, New Kids on the Block?
Yeah, them and worse, man. I mean, I grew up, I think my first memorable experience with, like, music outside of just what was playing around me. Cause I feel like the same way what you're saying there, where you're lying on the floor, you're just listening to what your dad's listening to. You know, it's something that is around you. It's forming your experience. But I mean, the first time I remember listening to music where I felt like this is for me, it was, cheesy. No, it wasn't even that. It
this
was Kids Incorporated.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes. Right? We're Kids Incorporated.
K-I-D-S.
Right? Yes. So, I mean, I think I was like a real Disney kid when it came to that stuff. I think that technically that was an HBO show, but, you know, just raised on that kind of saccharine, sugary stuff. You know, the typical, what would you say, suburbanite lifestyle, like almost like my life was frickin' Growing Pains or one of those sitcoms.
You can say white kid. It's okay to say white kid. Yeah.
Well, you know, I
don't
want to be
you may not. You may not be able to say white kid on Lamp Show, but you can say white kid on Thinking Outside the Lamp.
No, I know. And we talk about white privilege all the time on Lamp Show. But and actually, I don't have anything against, you know, people using language or anything like that. For some reason, I've taken like a 50s radio announcer style to like doing my show. Like, sometimes I feel like I'm overly, you know, proper and try not to swear because that could be uncivilized for a radio show.
Oh, man. So, our show is not that.
No, trust me. I've listened to many. I think I started listening around episode 50, maybe 55. So I'm well versed in how not appropriate.
In the horrificness that can be our show sometimes.
Actually, I have to say I'm kind of disappointed. You guys have mellowed out a little bit. There used to be a lot more sex talk, a lot more like double Dutch ovens or Dutch ruddering or whatever. Dutch oven's something else. So
I mean, it fits in there. Like, I mean, that's some people.
Let's not talk about how that fits in, all right? That's a little.
Oh, that's what she said.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it got
well, I wanted to follow up
okay, go
question
ahead, go
on
ahead.
Mine. So you're talking about you've got these two different worlds of music, and I don't want to get too personal, but do you feel like those – did you notice a conflict between those worlds of music growing up? Was there ever battles over the radio stations? I know you said they got divorced pretty early, but
– yeah, it was actually over the radio stations. They said it was about the record player and me. It was my fault. No.
I'm gonna spit all over my screen.
Oh man, maybe oh, kind of. Okay, okay.
So no, that was pretty traumatic then when you heard it was about the radio and you. Then. Yeah.
No, so you know it was really interesting. I think so. With my mom, I didn't appreciate my mom's music very much when I was younger. You know, like I said, it was a lot of Barbra Streisand, a lot of this dude named Topol who does like Russian folk songs.
Like, interesting.
Yeah, it was real weird. Like my mom had odd taste in music, and it's because
we call that eclectic.
Yeah, no, my mom's taste in music's weird. Like I have eclectic music taste. She's just weird. You know, okay. So I related to my dad's music a lot more, just because there is, you know, in that 70s classic rock, there's a little bit more aggression, not much, but more, you know. Definitely,
yeah, oh, totally.
Definitely a band like Sabbath or like AC/DC spoke to me a lot more than Van Halen, who like I still fucking despise. Like every time a Van Halen comes on the radio, I change the song. Like I can't.
Why is that, by the way? Is it Eddie himself? Is it Diamond Dave? What about Van Halen rubs you the wrong way?
It is everything about their music. Their music is so it is the lowest common denominator version of rock and roll. Made it, you know what it is? It's the New Kids on the Block of rock music.
Oh, like, it is nice. Just that's another jab right at me. Go for it.
It's just pop music made to make money with no soul whatsoever. Like, I can't.
Which I think if you ask Dave about that, I think he'd probably totally agree with you.
Oh, absolutely.
I think
they know. Yeah, yeah. They know. They're not fucking fooling anybody. Like, they're.
I don't think they're trying to.
No, you know? Not at all. They're Roxo the Rock Clown, man. Like, they care about cocaine.
Roxo the Rock Clown. That is fantastic.
So for me, like, the conflict, you know, so I guess I may not have gone, like, far enough into this. Because, like, when I was a teenager, you know, you start listening to your own music.
And, right.
Like, when I was with my mom, I could only listen to Christian music because at that point in our life, right. My mom was way on that. You know, there were incidents of tapes being thrown in the garbage, records being burned, like the works, you know.
But
at my dad's house, it was like the exact opposite. Like he would listen to an album, and based on the content, he would say yes or no, you can have this album. Like, my dad was really active in like my media consumption that way. But
nice.
Like, but in my
what would be inappropriate, by the way? I mean,
Body Count was pretty much the first album that he was like, absolutely not. Like, I guess KKK bitch just isn't my dad's deal. So, you know,
I wonder why.
Yeah. So
why would he be against the KKK? I don't understand.
Yeah. It's so there was like this dichotomy. So I started listening to, you know, a lot more, you know, heavy metal, like pretty standard heavy metal stuff like Metallica, Megadeth, that sort of thing.
Right. Right.
When I was at my dad's house, but at my mom's house, I had to like discover like effectively the Christian versions of those things and have those.
Nice.
And so,
I mean, there is some pretty decent Christian metal out there. Yeah, I mean, like,
I remember there was a band called Seventh Angel that I was really into. And like, I distinctly remember I would go to the Christian record store and they would have like open cassettes that you could listen to it before you bought it.
Nice.
And there was this one band called One Bad Pig. Okay.
Right.
And I listened to it and it was like nothing I had ever heard because it was literally the first punk album I had ever heard in my whole life.
You said punk album?
Yeah, it was like a punk band, like legitimately
Christian punk.
Yes, like just blasting.
That's fantastic.
Like blasting as fast as humanly possible in 4/4 time, three chords, like blah, 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 you know.
It's like anarchy into the run of me, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it was just that kind of stuff. And I really dug into it. And, you know, I was like this, you know, I know that all Christian music is a knockoff of something else. Like I was aware of that by the time I was in middle school, you know? And so I was like, there's gotta be bands like this that don't sing about Jesus. And then I found the Misfits and I found Black Flag and I found Slayer, which fucking changed my life. I was like,
walking into a record store with like a Christian punk tape and going, I'm like, do you have like the non-Christian version of this?
Do you have the satanic version of this? Cause I want to listen to that, you know? And the guy was like, yeah, here's Slayer's Decade of Aggression, man. Like, the first album I bought with my own money was Master of Puppets, and the second album I bought with my own money was Slayer's Decade of Aggression.
That's fantastic.
And I remember I listened, you know, Decade came on like two cassettes because I'm 800 years old and remember listening to cassettes. And it came on two cassettes, and by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, there's 10 more years of this music. Like, how have I not known about this already? Holy shit.
What have I been doing with my life?
Yeah.
God, why have you forsaken me with your horrible music?
Oh man. And like, so here's, I feel like I'm monopolizing the conversation. I'm going to move back to you. Okay.
It is your question coming next.
Yeah, it is.
Before you ask your question.
No, my question.
Go for it.
No, I'm kidding.
You scared me into submission.
Oh, okay, yeah, awesome. Yeah. So you grew up I know you grew up in Virginia, like around where my wife grew up. It is like the birthplace of like straight edge punk. Like you know that, right? Like Ian McKay.
I do know.
DC. Henry Rollins comes from that area.
Yeah.
Was there any inclination that was happening around you? Like when?
Oh, to me, no,
yeah,
not at all. You know, I mean, I knew the punks, I knew people around me that were into that music, but again, I was such a straight-laced little nerd. Even when I was like rebelling, like the real rebels would look at me and go, "Yeah, right," you know, because I was rebelling by listening to Poison and Slaughter.
I was beating kids like you up, man.
Right. So you were the guy listening to that music, and then I was like the poser. But like, I mean, I was rebelling in the fact that I was no longer trying to be a good kid, and I grew my peach fuzz mustache, and you know, I had a big rat tail in the back. So like, I was like really, I was scaring the hell out of the preppy kids.
Nice,
you know. Because I was kind of a former preppy kid. So like I was like a poster child for what goes bad after you start using heroin and meth, you know? So like this, they would just prop me up on stage and say, kids, don't be like this other kid who's listening to Warrant and Slaughter. And then of course, then the punks would come up and say, please don't be like this kid
who listens to Warrant and Slaughter.
Guns N' Roses was the big one, though, and come on, they're slightly rebellious. Isn't being a whiny bitch.
They were a huge deal to me when I was a kid. You know, their tour with Metallica that started with Faith No More, and then James Hetfield got injured and ended up with Body Count.
Like, right.
I mean, that was a pretty pivotal moment for me. Like, it was a great.
And Slash is no doubt one of the coolest fucking guitarists of all time. I won't say he's like the most proficient, though he is very proficient, but absolutely no holds barred. Nobody's fucking cooler than Slash.
Absolutely. Like, to this day, he rocks like a wrestling level gimmick that just kills all the time. Like, his stupid hair, his stupid hat, and his stupid vest or no vest. And kills it. Like, you see Slash.
He might as well be wearing a red bandana, huge sunglasses,
yeah,
and a ripple shirt, you
and
know?
Calling everyone brother. Like, I mean, it is a wrestling. It's a wrestling level gimmick. And if you saw that dude walking down the street, you'd be like, oh man, heroin's a hell of a drug. But, but you see him on stage and you're like, I want to be that guy. Like,
oh, totally.
It's awesome.
He totally has the art of being a performer down. And I think that's really what makes, I mean, he's got a great ear for melody. Don't get me wrong. I've, I, I have a love affair for Slash's guitar solos. I mean, they're one of the few guitar solos that, you know, I can like sing to myself in the shower or whatever.
Oh yeah, dude, the like November Rain, I could probably still hum the tune of November Rain.
Oh yeah, oh my god. Oh like, yeah.
Such a good song.
I can do
song.
It for you right now.
No, we don't have that much time. That's like a Let's fucking 15 minute long song.
Exactly. All right, wait, whose question is it?
It's your question. Your question.
Okay, all right. So I was thinking today that we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about, you know, what I'm doing and what you're doing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it occurred to me, if you walked up to me and asked me what I do on the street, I'd tell you about my job. But yesterday I was out, you know, playing an acoustic show for a double charity benefit because I'm a great guy and I donate my time to charity all the time because I'm absolutely one of the most. I'm just saying it was a charity for kids with cancer. You know, that's pretty goddamn charitable.
That's pretty good. I'm a fan.
I'm a horrible person.
I love kids with cancer.
I was playing a show yesterday anyways, and I realized anybody I met yesterday, I'd say, yeah, I'm a musician. I've been playing for years. I've got this podcast and that kind of stuff. So, I guess my question is for you, how do you handle your different hats and when do you really feel like you're in podcast mode and that you would tell people, oh, I run this podcast? Because, and the reason I say this is I feel like you guys are really getting to the point where this isn't just a thing anymore. I mean, you guys really have a solid podcast going that's entertaining. It's funny. It's got some reach and you're getting into the Comic Cons. So this is something you can legitimately put a hat on and say, yeah, this is a thing I do, you know, when you're talking to people.
So
there was a question in there somewhere.
A, thank you for saying such nice things about my podcast. I really appreciate that.
I'm only kissing up because I'm on.
No, I'm going to say nice things about your podcast too. So get off my nuts.
All right. Okay. All right.
No. So for me, it's very situational, you know, when people ask, you know, when people ask what I do for a living, I tell them I work in a print shop because that's what I do now.
Right.
You know, and nice. Oh, what's that like? You know, it's just we make stickers for packaging. You know, I'm covered in ink most every day. And it's, you know, it's just what I do. I enjoy my job. I enjoy the people that I work with. But, you know, in general, that's not what I do. And when people ask, what do you do? Like, what I do is I coach my daughter's roller derby team. And I do this podcast, and those are really the things that like I really do. And when they ask, oh, what's the podcast about? I say mostly comic books and dicks. Like, and people are either instantly sold on it or instantly repulsed by it. And
But I think that's a good litmus test.
Yeah.
Because if you don't put that up front, you know, people may come listen to it and be like, dear Lord.
Yeah. Cause like Juan will present it like, oh, we do a podcast about pop culture. And I will always have to step in and be like, it is not for children's. Like, it is for fucking adults only. And it's vulgar and it's fucking hilarious.
And maybe just tack on, we do an explicit podcast.
Oh yeah, we definitely. And when they look us up on iTunes or Stitcher, it's rated E for explicit for sure.
And to be quite honest, a little bit racist since Doyle's turn is coming on.
Yeah, we were talking about that today. I was like, when did our show go from like dicks and farts to racism? And Juan pointed right at Doyle and said, "That's Doyle. That's all Doyle." But
it's just fun racism, though.
Oh yeah, it's you know what's hilarious about it is, you know, Doyle's Mexican, Juan's Mexican, I'm half Mexican. Steve, who's on the show occasionally, is part Black. Like, you know, John.
I thought you were going to say he's occasionally Mexican.
He's occasionally Mexican. He's occasionally inside of Mexicans. you know, I mean, it's like we have a fairly multicultural cast of friends, but we're all assholes. So we just kind of run with the we're all assholes.
That's kind of the charm of it, though. I mean, when I listen to you guys, you know, it's and I think this is what you're going for. It sounds like a bunch of friends hanging out.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's why anybody wants to listen to it, though, because none of us have friends anymore. We're all stuck in our, you know, our little worlds.
And what's awesome about it is because of the format of our show, you know, Doyle hangs out with us and we say, dude, just come on the show and talk with us about it. Or yeah, like right, you, exactly. I listen to your show and I think to myself, God damn it. Like, I know that Juan has asked him to be on the show. He just needs to come on the show. Like, that's the kind you fit in with this cast of, like, what did I say yesterday? A motley assortment of lovable assholes. Like, you know, it's.
So you guys are way more knowledgeable than I am, and I have many more gaps in my memory when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
You know, it's funny because, like, people always say that. Like, Steve has said that to me before. Doyle says that. Like, Doyle knows a fuckload about comic books. So does Tim. You know, John knows way more than I do. You know,
right?
And
right.
There's like these moments where people are like, "Well, I don't know about that." But if I ask you a question about whatever sparks your interest, you're gonna go.
Oh,
like,
sure, you can I'll talk about go. Something.
And what's cool is we get the chance to say, you know, we go around the table in the miscellaneous section. We say, you know, what were you excited about this week? And so you get to be the expert on what you're excited about.
What you're interested in, yeah.
And sometimes, you know, Juan always bitches, oh, we can't all talk about the same thing because, you know, Gabe doesn't watch anything that Juan watches or whatever. But I like that because we get this assortment of, you know, I read random shit that nobody else read. Doyle read random shit that nobody else read. You know, Juan watched random shit that nobody else read. Watched. You know, it's just.
And you get a wider perspective that way, too. And that's what I really like about that.
So my question now.
And I think we might have to start doing a lightning round here because we're both BSers and we just
we have chewed up most of our half an hour already. Don't tell Juan I'm gonna let it go long.
Almost another spit take.
Go real long.
Oh God. That's why they call it the long box.
That's why they call it the long box. So listening to your show, I haven't had a chance to go to archive.org and listen to the first, I want to say like first five shows, because I think I caught episode six before it dropped off. So,
right.
So I've listened to like the last half of your show.
Which is the better part to listen to anyway, awesome. The first five, all great episodes, but just like you guys say about your start, you know, a little shaky, still figuring out the format, that kind of stuff.
So I love this gimmick of you all play music kind of in the bumpers between your loose, like, conversational interview thing that you have going, which incidentally I love because, like, the people that you have there are just like opening up, talking to, I mean, sometimes it's really funny, sometimes it's really serious, like, it just depends on the people in the room. It's really, really cool. But so you play the music in between the interview segments, and at the end of the show you declare a winner of the segment.
Yes.
And the winner records the theme song to the next episode. Right. What brought that on? I love that gimmick. Dude.
All right, so I'm a fan of gimmicks everywhere, and part of what drives my podcast is just the fact that I'm a fan, you know? So I've seen an art form and a medium here that I just absolutely love, and when I fan out on something, I just want to do it. That's what it comes down to. When I used to go to Phish concerts, like the first couple that I went to, I think it was 96, 97, something like that, and there was a point where I saw what Phish was doing and I was like, I don't really want to go to their shows all the time. I want to go and do that instead. Not saying I'm going to be as good as Phish,
better.
I love what they're doing. Well, okay. I see where you're going with that.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. They're very much an acquired taste. So
it is probably the one thing musically that you and I would completely disagree on.
Actually, not so much anymore. I mean, it's kind of funny. I've come to see Phish for what they are, and they're very much a rock and roll fantasy for, you know, young adults, basically. And they do that rather well for young adult hippies, I should say.
I like to call them Trustafarians.
Yeah. I mean, it's very specific what they do, and I feel like they do that rather well. But anyways, the point is, you know, I saw them. I wanted to do what they were doing. And when it comes to podcasts, I've done a lot of studying of different shows. I mean, I watch Comedy Bang Bang. I watched it religiously while that was still on. Oh, fantastic. So what is that show full of? It's full of all these fantastic gimmicks.
Yeah.
I'm Scott Aukerman. What happens every time there's this new stupid phrase underneath his name, right? They go over, let's check in with Reggie or let's check in with Al, you know, and then something stupid happens. Like all of this stuff is like the framework of your show, and you insert the joke here into what you're doing. So that specific gimmick comes from another show that I absolutely love. It's Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, okay.
And what do they used to do at the end of every show? Colin, you're the winner today. You get to announce the credits in the style of, you know, whatever it was. And then they do the credits, you know, and it never was like the most hilarious moment of the show, but it was one more way to make something, you know, special or unique happen in the show, you know? So that's kind of when I first came up with the concept, and it didn't turn out like how I envisioned, which is good because I feel it's better. But when I first came up with the idea, I was like, I'd like to do a musical podcast that's not really about, you know, a band coming in and just playing their songs.
Right.
I want this to be like a musical improv show that's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where we just define topics or ideas or chord progressions, and then we just go. And then, of course, you know, I'm a huge fan of like Marc Maron, you know, or Chris Hardwick, and, you know, a couple other really good long form podcast talk shows. So that's where all the chatter in between comes from. And
you know what?
I mean, if you listen closely, I think I'm totally ripping off Marc Maron when it comes to my interview style.
You know, I love Marc Maron's podcast, and like there's been, you know, episodes where I'm having a bad day and he's having a bad day. And
right.
then when he plays the guitar at the end, like,
yes.
it makes me emotional. Like, I'm just like, man, totally. that's what I needed. And it's just so cool. You know, you harness that sometimes. Like, there's moments. The episode on morality really comes to mind. Where,
yeah, okay.
Where you were talking to the lady that has the plots of land where she grows food.
Yes.
And then Sophia, the guy that's very into – I'm so bad with names. I just remember what they do.
That's all right.
But the guy that's really into native music, and when you guys did the chant, like at the end, dude, I was at work just like, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry like a bitch, don't cry, don't cry.
Oh, wow.
Like,
that's awesome.
I mean, it was really, I mean, and I'm like that. I get really emotional about
it. No, I am too. I mean, I cry at all for Hallmark commercials.
For like 30 years of my life. But, you know, it was so moving because not even because I was invested in what they were saying. Like there were moments where I was like, man, that's such bullshit. But
yeah, some of it. Yeah. Yeah
but
yeah.
They were so invested in it. They were so, they loved what they were doing so much that it came through and it was so good, man. Like you,
absolutely.
You pulled something out of that moment with the combination of interview and music that I never could do on this show because we don't have that link to the emotional artistic side of it. You know, we can play a trailer on the show or we can have like an interview or whatever, but that emotional artistic moment never happens within our show like it does on yours. It's really, really cool.
I'll disagree with you just a little bit there because there was one interview that you did during, I can't remember which Comic-Con, but it was with the woman who was talking about
Aletha
diversity.
Martinez. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Diversity in comic books. And I felt like that was a moment. Yeah, a very emotional moment in an interview where obviously you started crying.
Oh, yeah. Because I bitched up, because that's what I do.
which was great, though, because, I mean, it was bringing across the heaviness of that moment. So I do agree. In general, your guys' hangout sessions don't lend themselves to that, but I feel like your interview segments have the potential for that, and sometimes you really do hit on that.
That's awesome. So. Well, thank you. Whose question is it? I don't remember.
I think it's mine. So,
I think
they have a lot of. I'm
just kidding.
Wait, who's okay? First of all, is, it's just multiple choice.
Okay.
Is Namor a bitch, or is Aquaman a pussy, or C, both?
C, both.
Okay. All right. Okay. Your question.
Okay. My question. Okay. Rapid fire. Oh, let's do some rapid fire questions, like some yes, no, right. Some like multiple.
Okay.
Choice.
Okay.
This is rapid fire. Rapid fire. Okay. Fish or Slayer?
I'm still going to go. God damn it. Slayer's freaking awesome, though. Because my favorite song by, I think of almost all time is Cemetery Gates.
Oh, right? It's, no, yeah. No, that's a Pantera song, you asshole.
That's Pantera, goddammit! All right, then it's Fish.
Okay. All right, your turn. My rapid fire question. Go.
Okay, all right. Juan seems to not remember a lot of things from the 80s. Have you guys ever thought about giving him an NMRI to address his memory loss from that time?
You mean that time when he was, like, not born yet?
Yeah. Juan is
young, so he doesn't remember things because he has 800 older siblings that hogged all forms of media. Like,
I don't get it. I don't understand what you're saying. I think we should look into that and just see why.
Also,
all right, your question.
Also, head trauma. Okay, so what is the best, like, live experience that you've had? Like, it doesn't have to be like your favorite band or the best music, but just like the experience of it.
This one ties right into you, actually. I was on a road trip across country, I think in 1997, maybe 98, going to a rainbow gathering. If that gives you any clue what kind of hippie I am.
Wow.
And on my way back, I picked up a couple of hitchhikers from the rainbow gathering who just had to go make a drop off in Boulder, Colorado
of herbal substances, herbal supplements.
It was totally legal. Anyways, they kind of went off and did their thing, and I quickly ran away from them once we got to Boulder, Colorado. But one of the coolest experiences I've ever had was wandering the streets of Boulder and suddenly just being presented with this amazing outdoor music scene that was like kind of happening all around me in multiple places. And I can't confirm that this was actually them, but I swear to God, I saw Humphreys McGee playing in a local restaurant, like somewhere in the street somewhere. And it was like one of the most amazing live performances I've ever seen. Anytime you're just kind of walking somewhere and you just happen upon really great semi-improvisational music, I mean, you're walking into like an energy field. Like, it's just such a fantastic experience. That was not a lightning round answer.
That's okay. It was a good answer. And like the potentiality of Humphreys McGee playing live on the street in Boulder, real high, like real high.
I know.
And
it was
also
so crazy.
Everyone watching them, real high, man, real high.
Totally. So I guess this makes it my question. So there is a lot of pot in Colorado.
Correct.
Are you allowed to bring any to Ohio?
No, that is a federal crime.
God damn it. God damn it. All right, your question.
Call your legislators and be like, give me that weed. I want that weed.
We've got medical. Oh, but apparently
You're one step away.
Apparently, I've got to have some kind of disease to get medical marijuana.
I will kick you really hard in the back, and then you'll be good.
Nice. Chronic pain. All right. All right. I'm with you there.
Okay, so this is going to be my last question, then you give me one last question, okay?
All right.
My last question. This may make or break our friendship.
Oh, God.
Which do you like better to, like, listen to? Do you like listening to a really jammy doom metal band or a really jammy jam band? Like, which do you like better?
Ooh, I got to tell you, one of my favorite bands, local bands, is a band called Bowl. and actually, you know them as Resonaut. Right.
Holy shit, they're good, by the way.
They are fantastic, man. And when I talked about this on the show, but basically we played a show with them live, and I remember they got up on stage and the keyboardist hit one note, and it's just going, and then the bass player's going like, dun, dun, dun. And then like all the rest of the band left the stage, and the bass player still playing along to this keyboard for like 15 minutes. And then they come back and they just rock out this like improv, like totally doom metal kind of jam. And it was just so infectiously head nodding. Every goddamn person in the venue was nodding their head and couldn't stop. Like you were either standing there nodding your head or you had to leave and go to the patio.
Nice.
You know?
Cause live, so we're going to go with Doom on whenever, that. Baby.
Yes. Yes.
Oh man. So, good. We're friends still. Doom metal. Fuck yes.
So, this is not quite lightning round, but we'll try and make it that way. When you were approaching this whole thing, doing the podcast, when what's your motivation to keep doing it? Why bother with it? You know, it's like, I don't think any of us expect to be famous off this stuff, but nonetheless, you have to put this stuff in the public sphere. So there's always that like little nagging thing of fame hanging over you. So like, how does that fuck with you? I guess is what I'm saying, you know, and does it, you know, make you worry about continuing to do what you're doing?
So I have been in bands since I was like 15 until I was like in my early 30s. This is like the third podcast I've worked on. I wrote a book that got published by like an independent, like, you know, digital press. You know, I've had short stories published in magazines. Like I have always felt the desire to create. Like I've always drawn or written, or I was in choir and bands and like all these things. I've always wanted to do art and create. And this is that mode for me now. Like I love making videos. I love talking on the podcast. I love writing articles, which I'm finally have a computer that's portable again. And I can start doing like having to go hide in my little comic book dungeon to write. And you know, there's this artistic expression that's always been inside of me that I've always wanted to get out. And I have no training. I have very little skill. I know I'm never going to get rich or famous at it, but it's
telling my life story.
Yeah. But it's what I fucking love to do. And so I just, I don't care if we had 10 listeners, I'd be just as happy as, you know, the 8 Patreon supporters we have, you know, we make slightly less than $100 a month, you know, like it's
probably, which is fantastic.
It's probably never going to pay my bills. And if it does, that's great. But I mean, dude, this week I interviewed an Emmy and Golden Globe winning actor.
I know, it's pretty fantastic. Like, yeah.
You know, I've interviewed some of my heroes in comic books. I've interviewed, you know, musicians and actors and other podcasters. And I get to do this thing that I've always wanted to do because of my mom's love of NPR. So there's this show.
Right. There's the NPR influence coming through there.
There's
right?
this show called Fresh Air. All right.
Yes.
And this lady, Terry Gross, sometimes she interviews the most serious people on the face of the earth that wrote a book about, you know, sexual harassment on Wall Street. And the next day she will fucking interview Nick Kroll, and she gives as much respect to the lady that wrote this super serious book as she does to Nick Kroll, as she does to Jay-Z, as she does to Alec Baldwin, as she does to Noam Chomsky.
Right.
Like everybody gets the same level of respect. And I love that I can talk to somebody.
And calm composure in her voice as well.
Yeah. I get too excited, but like, I like that we can take a company like Fanbase Press that does Kinsey and Penguins versus Possums, super independent, really small, but putting out their heart, like, you know, putting out their passion. Yeah. And then I can interview fucking Brian Cox, who's been in fucking every goddamn movie ever, you know, and I get to put those people, you know, I get to put Jonathan Blackshire on a level playing field with Ryan Dunleavy, who we interviewed today.
Yeah, there's something very wrong with that.
No, it's awesome because you're doing your passion, he's doing your passion, and just like the show, you're both experts at what you're doing. you know, you're an expert at your podcast because it's your thing. And he's an expert at action philosophers because he draws that fucking book. You know, he knows everything about it because it's his thing. And I love being able to say, if you're creating it, you deserve to have a voice and you deserve to say, this is why I'm doing it. This is what I love. And that's what drives me to do this. Like, if I get famous, fuck yes. I would love to do this for a living.
Right. That's great. If I'm not going to complain.
If I don't, I get to bullshit with my friends for several hours every other week and interview some of the coolest fucking people in the world. So that's what drives me. Man, I got hyped there. Woo. I've been drinking green tea all day.
It's fantastic, though. I mean, it says to me that there's a reverse side of this, right? Like, it's not just that this is great and I'm going to keep doing it because I love it, but it's like, even if I didn't love this thing, like, I can't stop creating. You know, there's just this part of me that always has to create something, because I've tried quitting, you know, music, or I've tried quitting, you know, whatever it is. And eventually I'll be sitting around and I'll get some other idea. And I have to say, I love that that's your philosophy of, like, if you create it, you deserve to showcase it. And one of my biggest influence, I think, that motivated me to start my own podcast was probably Chris Hardwick, because that's absolutely his philosophy. He says it all the time. Like, make a thing, whatever it is, whatever your interest is, you know, make a thing and do it the best that you can, you know, but don't feel like just because you're not capable or talented or whatever, that you can't do a thing. Just do it anyways. And, you know, and maybe you'll get good at it and get talented, and, you know, who knows? So
that's awesome.
I guess we're supposed to wrap this up now.
Yeah, we're wrapping it up. Juan walked down the stairs, which means, hey, shut up, fatty. So, so you got to ask me the question first, so I get to ask the question first. Jonathan Blackshire, how can people find the motherfucking Lamp Show?
Okay, well, basically, just look us up on Facebook. It's LAMMP.
Yeah, which I corrected at the beginning of this episode because I've been saying LAAMP for like three episodes now.
God damn it! But it stands for Let's All Make Music, Please. And, you know, the point of the show is to get folks together to step out of their regular situations, their bands, and make music in a band for the day. And basically, best way to find us is Facebook at the time being. I do have a Twitter, but I don't get any interaction on it. So,
you know,
we're sticking with that.
You know what you do is you tie your Facebook and Twitter together, and then every time you post on Facebook, it just posts it on Twitter, and two birds, one
stone. God damn it! Why can't I figure these things out?
Little pro tip, son. No, I'm not a pro. Don't take that as advice. I mean, take that as advice, but don't take anything else I say as advice. I am not a qualified professional podcaster.
Point taken. And on that note, since I'm going to use this clip on my show as well, where can my listeners find out more about you guys?
Well, everybody, you can find Thinking Outside the Long Box at the illustrious www.totlb, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, on Twitter and Instagram at @outsidelongbox. You can shoot us emails at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com, or you can call the mic.
I just want to say, this wouldn't be an end cap if somebody didn't interrupt you.
Okay. So, fuck you. In the words of the great Jim Cornette, fuck you, thank you.
I'm sorry, you can finish that.
Okay, yeah. Or you can call us at the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline, 970-573-6148, and leave us literally any kind of message, as you have proven, sir. It will end up on the show.
I'm disappointed we didn't get any time to talk about that, but there's plenty of time for that in the future.
Oh, for sure. John, we need to have you on the show again and maybe do like a full crossover episode like we've done with Clyde in the past. I think that'd be a lot of
fun. Absolutely. I'd love to do it. We'll let your listeners decide whether or not they want to have me back.
Oh, dude, we don't care about them.
Fuck those guys.
We do this all for ourselves. You know that. No.
Well, I'd love to do it. So, you know, let me know whenever you guys are up for it.
Oh, we will. We'll do it soon. So
excellent.
John, thank you for being on Thinking Outside the Long Box.
And thank you for being on The Lamp Show. Keep shining your lights, everyone.
And dicks. Ha ha ha!
We don't have a catchphrase. Like you have a catchphrase. I had to put in our catchphrase. It's just dicks.
Well, I do have a catchphrase, but I even got it wrong. It's supposed to be keep shining your lamps.
Oh, that's okay. I fixed it by putting in our catchphrase.
Hi, this is Chris Mowry, writer of Godzilla Rulers of Earth and employee of IDW Publishing, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hello, Hobie listeners. You don't know us, but we know you. I'm Sean.
And I'm Ian.
And we're the Pittsburgh Nerd Podcast, better known as the bad guys, the villains of the story, if you will. A feud that we didn't even start. It was started by Jason. All because he called us out. And we retaliated and such. Because, what did we say, Ian?
We got rings, baby.
That's right. We've got rings. And the feud escalated. And now here we are, the bad guys. So here we are petitioning today to be the 2016 Floppy Villains of the Year. And to hear just how villainous we are, check out our show. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Satchel, and any other number of podcasting apps that you may find out there. Jeez, I can't even talk. That's how villainous I am. So there you go. Go ahead. Give us a listen.
Go Steelers.
My saddest moment? Dog murder.
Oh, we're back, by the way.
Dog murder was the case that they gave me.
Doyle went to jail.
I was innocent.
Dog murder rules everything around me.
Oh, wow. I hope not. That sounds like a bizarre, weird life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, we're back.
Oh, and we're back. Maybe John doesn't want to be on the show because we like are hurting his business because of the racism.
I have no idea.
I don't believe that that's possible.
Only when there's little kids walking around the store with their parents.
That's 100% possible.
Yeah, that is 100% possible.
And Doyle's got to be like, Dix, come. And then the Lord said on to Matthew.
I'm just more honest than you, cocksuckers. You do the same thing when they're not there.
Yeah, I know.
I just can't get past the fact. I mean, I try not to, but I'm rolling. You know what I mean? Like the train's left the station. Where we go is where we're going.
Oh, man.
Hope you're not stuck on the tracks.
Wow.
Let's come to town.
So my old man pick is largely born out of doing the co-interview with Jonathan Blackshire from The Lamp Show. Spelled with two M's, not two A's. Just want to keep clarifying that because it's my mistake.
So your old man pick of the day is something that didn't happen until today?
No. It comes from that because we were talking about it. So we were talking a little bit about music, you know, and because obviously his show is about music. Let's all make music, please. And he asked me, you know, he asked me the standard thinking outside the long box question. What's the origin story of? And he asked me, what's the origin story of, like, your enjoyment of music? And I told him a story that, you know, I may have told on the show before, but my dad, when he used to drink, he would come home from work and he would sit down on his easy chair.
Pulled out his shotgun and murdered
my dog. Yeah. He would get a beer and then he would put on like Santana's Abraxas album. And I would like literally lay on the floor and stare at the album cover and try to figure out how the music related to the album cover. You know, it's just something I did when I was a kid. I was like 4 or 5 years old or something like that. And I just, there's so many stories like that that I have about music and about listening to music because it is such a big part of my life, whether I think about it or not. Like, there's really not a time in my life where I haven't been trying to discover new music or trying to listen to new music or finding a new brand of music that I enjoy. And it's just really interesting to me because at no point in my life have I considered, until like last week, considered writing something about music or doing a podcast about music or any of that sort of thing, because I've just been an enjoyer of music as opposed, like, I've been in bands and I've made music before, but I've never felt that I was qualified to like think about or talk about those things. And then I realized, hey, like, I have this weird wealth of knowledge about music, and it's kind of fun to like go back and think about the ways different types of music have affected me throughout my life. And so my old man pick is basically
Man, I really like listening to like my Spotify and music and finding new kinds of music and new bands, and it's just something I really like actively pursuing. And much in the same way I like finding independent comic books that speak to me, I like finding music that nobody's heard of that speaks to me. It's kind of cool. It's fun. And John's a big part of that. Listening to his show over the last couple weeks has been, oh yeah, I do like that kind of shit. I should go, or these guys are talking about this really cool idea. I should go listen to their band real quick. And, you know, sometimes their band is terrible because he talks to a lot of local bands. But sometimes their band is like, oh, fuck, dude. Like, he had this band on last time called Resonaut that's like a doom metal band that I'm like, holy shit, this is really, really good. It's like my favorite thing right now. So, I don't know. I dig music. I dig finding music.
That's not music.
It's metal you can sleep to.
Dude, doom metal is totally music. It is. Dude, what's your favorite? Fine, what's your favorite kind of music?
Anything that's not.
Doom metal's not like that at all. Fine.
Anything else is cool.
Doom metal's more like
long
chords.
It's like nap music.
Punctuated by.
It's effectively metal jam bands is really what they are.
Yeah, that's fair and accurate.
But like a band like Earth, they have no vocalist. Like it's just instrumental music.
Earth, Wind, and Fire? Bro.
Nope, just Earth.
Just doom.
Just doom. No metal, just doom.
Doom?
What are you here for, suckers?
How about you, Doyle? What's your favorite kind of music?
It's really dependent, actually, because I just go through straight phases. Because I listen to mostly books or podcasts if I'm listening
to
audio.
At work, that's what I listen to.
So, I don't know. It'll be weird, like, because I have no, like, defining pattern. I'll be like, oh, I feel like listening to, like, folksy country-style music for a week straight, and then I'll do that, and then I'll be back to podcasts or... And then I'm like, oh, 80s R&B, and then I'll do that, and I'll go back to podcast. So it's like, I don't know. I can find music I like in most genres. Except for, like, pure hickbilly country. Like, there's a one lane of country that I just can't, I don't see it.
David Allan Coe.
Yeah, it's like, how many dogs can die in this genre? It's a lot. Not as many as I have.
It's already a childhood trauma that you don't want to deal with.
You'd think some of that would resonate with him.
Yeah. I had it worse than any of you.
I actually saw it happen. Tim, you and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday.
We have very similar taste in music.
With your Spotify shuffle.
Because, like, my iPod on shuffle is a fucking adventure. You could hear, like, the theme song to Pirates of the Caribbean, followed immediately by, like, Cash Rolls Everything Around Me into, like, Rascal Flatts, because it's one of the few country bands I approve of, until what Juan was just doing earlier.
Yeah, no, I'm out.
I love that. I love that. It makes me feel happiness and tiredness. One of the best musics to go to sleep to for me is black metal, because it's just like, and a guy going, and it just sounds like white noise.
I feel
and
like that takes no talent. I mean, to do the guitar, the guitar, but
no,
I
it takes very little talent.
Okay,
like
I don't know.
To hide it.
Black metal. Black metal is like the punk rock of like heavy metal. It's very much so. Like once you become talented, you're no longer a true black metal band. Like you are one of those death metal bands or a tech metal band. Like
it's like the. Thrash metal. Thrash metal is very,
very much
simple.
Yeah.
The drummer is the hardest working motherfucker.
And that's just because they're blast beating their way through the whole thing.
That hasn't evolved, I don't think, that many times in like musical history.
Where,
like,
I don't think thrash metal.
You don't actually have to be that talented. Like, it's not about how talented you are for the quality of your music. Somehow.
There's definitely something to be said for the energy of a music being more important than, like, the talent behind the music. So.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's, like, heavy metal bands that I listen to that, like, I could teach you how to play those.
Oh yeah,
tomorrow.
Some of my favorite punk bands literally have the same three chord progression for 70% of their songs. Yes. Looking at you, Ramones. Like
I played the bass at a punk show once, and I don't play the bass.
Exactly.
And nobody knows.
They're all just keep hitting this chord.
That's probably exactly what
that's
he
what
had
they
to
told
do.
Me to do.
He's all hit this chord, just do it as fast as humanly possible.
I was taking photos and the guy was like, nah, our bass didn't show up. Can you play the bass? I was like, no.
He's like, he's all perfect.
Perfect.
Over and over again. And I was like, I can do that. I only played like three songs. Nobody noticed the fucking thing, dude. Everyone's like, yeah. I'm like, I'm so
much. It's the best bass player ever! That guy's so much better than the other guy!
Who actually knows how to play the bass?
That's amazing.
Anybody want to venture an old man pick before we wrap up the show?
We kind of already did mine with video games.
Video games?
Yeah, how it's like utterly evolved from like kids hanging out in an arcade machine.
What was your first experience like with competitive gaming? Because I remember watching like The Wizard and having the Nintendo playoffs and stuff when I was a kid.
Like, there's like the D&D nerds, right, that like all get together. Back in the day with computer gaming, you had to lug your entire computer. Fucking computer, your monitor, your keyboard, your mouse, like...
LAN party, baby.
Yeah, that was like my first experience, and we played like Quake 1 with like 10 people in a room.
When Xbox went to LAN party for the first time, and like, it became so easy to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fucking amazing. I remember Halo 1 LAN parties were insane. We'd have like 20 fucking TVs. You'd only match so many up, but it'd be like 18 different pods going. It was crazy.
Yeah. That was basically my experience. Like, me and like five guys from high school playing Quake 1 and just like... yelling at each other from across the room, like, oh, I can't believe you fucking got me. Like, shit like that.
Nice.
None of this, I fucked your mom and you're probably black. Like, all this hate speech that goes on Xbox Live now.
Oh, dude, I can't.
Ashton, I was like, how do you Ashton, say this? You're probably white.
Ashton always asks me, like, why don't you have headphones and a mic so that you can, like, listen in on the chatter and the... you know, get in a chat and play with a squad and stuff. I was like, I don't want to hear those assholes. Like, right? I don't want to have a conversation with those pieces of shit. I just want to sit down and play a game.
Do you know what's crazy? So for a while, I used to just say, and thanks, good game, to no matter who I played with. I played a ton of Halo 2 and was ranked pretty high on it. And, like, that would infuriate people if we were losing because they were right. talking so much shit. You know, you fucking suck. You hate your mom. Your mom must be the worst player because you're the fucking worstest player ever. And like, I'm just
that's
like, yeah.
some mean fucking dog talking shit right
but
there.
But dude, you get people like that. They're just going off. Like, how could you suck so bad? And you're like, hey, thanks, buddy. Really appreciate it. You have a good time. I started taking it further after a while. I was like, man, I really like that thing. You're really good at that thing you do right there. That's awesome. You have to practice that a lot. And after a while, dude, I can't believe how many people fucking broke down on Xbox chat. Like assholes that were like, I'm sorry, bro. Like, I was being a dick.
You're like, yeah, you were.
And I was just like, really? What the fuck?
You can kill
that's because
people
those
so many people just need a little bit of counseling, man.
Those people get like no validation in their life at all. Like, everybody's telling them you're wasting your life playing video games, and you're like, man, you were really good at that one thing. They're like, I am. I'm good at something. Nobody believes me. Like,
no, true. It was weird. I stopped doing it because it was creeping me out. I was like,
you don't understand. My mom just shot my dog in the face. This is all I have.
Believe games. Me. I understand.
Oh, man.
That's not going to catch on because that's horrible.
Because no one
it's not even
on.
Funny.
It is to no. me and Tim.
I know.
Because we knew it would annoy the
because
shit out of you.
We think it's funny because of the reaction I'm getting right now from
oh,
you.
Oh, I'm good. Oh, it's going to get cut out
it's
every
not
single
gonna
time.
Get, it's not going to get. It's not going to catch on. No. I'm going to cut it out of
yeah,
the show.
I am going to cut it out.
Bullshit, you are.
So
just wait.
Just wait. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for every instance of...
Throw down.
To get cut out of the
no,
show.
Oh, it will.
Fine, we'll just keep doing it, make your editing.
You guys are
going
to mud wrestle before the event in October. I see it now.
Oh, oof, man.
That sounds terrible.
KY wrestling match between
ooh,
Gabe and Juan.
Ooh, that's a lot of KY yeah. that we're going to need.
Ugh.
Well, apparently I'd the Tysa, you can get like 5 gallon drums of it on
well,
it
if you would
so.
Like to see that, then definitely
yes.
hit us up on the two different
smooth
ways that you can
segue.
Support us. You can go to... Amazon.totlb.com and buy things off of Amazon in the exact same way you normally buy things off of Amazon, but it gives us a little kickback. Or you can go to patreon.com/totlb.
Why are you talking so fast?
Because that's how I always
you're
do
talking
these.
As fast as fucking Doyle talks.
So funny to me. Patreon.com/totlb.
I didn't realize I talked that fast.
You can get it's just because you're weeded. You oh, okay. For as little as $1 a month, you can get exclusive videos. And this is where I get to announce my new project. So
yay.
I got my camera, I got my computer, and I'm gonna be starting a new project. Doyle is participating in this project with me. It's
called they're taped
porn
to the toilet.
.com/totlb.
Yeah. The camera's taped to the toilet at the moment.
We're gonna turn the air conditioner on because I'm doing this. I don't want to be uncomfortable.
So, the show is going to be called It's Just the Worst, all right? And it's literally me, and so we don't have to sit
still
and watch the movie
like
together.
Porno.
But we don't have
oh,
to watch the movie together,
it.
But we're going to watch
I was like, what is this fucking thing I decided I'm doing with you that I don't know that you're talking about right now?
Ten different people are going to sit down and watch that person's least favorite movie of all time, and then we're going to have a little discussion about it. Doyle is in on Superman 4.
It is bad.
It is real bad.
Is that the Richard Pryor one?
I believe so, yeah.
I like that one. Oh, he's stealing pennies? Oh, buddy, it's the best!
Anyways,
it's not the best. It's not the best,
mad.
But I like it.
I've never
it.
Been mad at a movie. I was upset.
Save it. Save it for the recording. But the way it's going to work out, these are going to be on they're going to be on YouTube for free eventually, but our Patreon supporters are going to get access to these probably like a good month before they go live on YouTube.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, this is something that
shows how much you speak to me, too.
I know. I haven't had a chance to talk with you about it. So,
Mommy and Daddy are fighting.
I hate when Mommy and Daddy fight. But be sure to go to patreon.com/TOTLB and sign up. It'll be part of the videos that you get for pretty much any Patreon tier that you join on. It's just the worst. It's going to start coming out fairly soon. I got to start organizing times to record the videos and stuff like that. But I've already started working on like the intros for all of the videos.
Who's the furthest?
Who's
all in?
A lot of people you don't know, like just a lot of my random friends.
That doesn't sound fun.
Zach Bank from Average Guys Wrestling Podcast. He's going to watch Dragon Wars. Doyle, we're going to see. This is what's crazy. Doyle is going to do Superman 4. Rob Walker from Victorian Cutout Theater is going to do Nick Cage's Knowing, going back to our.
Think I might have a pick for this movie.
Which one is that one?
I have no idea. I've never seen it. Okay. My friend Dan Mothershed, who's like a local actor, picked a rom com called One Day. I don't even know what it's about. A friend from the Sofa King podcast. She's part of the Ultras group that they
Why
have.
Why haven't they fucking sent us a promo?
Oh, they're way bigger than us.
That wasn't the question that I asked.
I don't know.
You're friends with somebody who does it.
Somebody that's a listener of theirs that I'm in a group with. Her name is Rogue Leader. Her least favorite movie, Gremlins.
Oh, what?
Isn't that weird? I thought that was weird. Michael Kirk, we're doing Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, that's a good movie, too.
I don't want to watch it again, though. It's a fucking weird movie.
There's no midgets, though.
Seriously, I don't need to watch again.
Yeah, it's
when I was done with it, I was like, moving, it disturbs me. I'll think about it for a while. Fucking put it away forever.
But it's going to be good. There's some movies that I really like. My friend David Herrera, who lives in Arizona, or New Mexico, I mean, is probably the person that's farthest away, but we'll do it one time when he comes up. His pick is Clerks.
He's a pastor, though. Yeah, he is a pastor. Maybe it's because of all the cuss words.
I'm going to swear as much as possible during that.
Knowing David, it's not because of the cuss words.
It's probably because he just doesn't like it.
Which is weird, though.
Anyways, so there's movies that I like, movies that are good, movies that are, pop culture classicable, Gremlins. And then there's movies that I have no interest in watching ever again.
Who's Doyle. That dude that hates the alien movie?
Oh, Matt Renwick? Yeah. I thought about having him on, but I have to invite him special because he doesn't Facebook anymore. And I wanted to get the first 10 people. We're going to try to get
Prometheus.
We're trying to get
so much fun.
I'm going to try to get all 10 of them done, and we're going to do seasons of it. So we'll do season 1 with 10 episodes.
Juan, you knew about all this, right?
Then we'll get
I had
10.
No idea about anything. I don't know what's going on.
No, it's I've got it all worked out, and it'll be smooth. Once I have the videos done, we'll start releasing them.
It'll be smooth.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm excited for it. It'll be a lot of fun.
I wish I could share the sentiment with you.
Why you gotta be a dick? Why you gotta beat me down like that? Why you gotta bring it up so that he starts
being
a dick?
I'm an idea man. I thrive on enthusiasm. Don't take the wind out of my sails.
Yeah. Anyway, go to patreon.com/TOTLB, sign up for that, and that'll give you access to those videos as they start coming out way before they end up going free on YouTube. You can visit us at www.totlb.com, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox, on Instagram or Twitter at @outsidelongbox. You can call the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline to leave us a message about literally anything that you want to talk about. 970-573-6148.
Motherfucker's dead, y'all.
And if you do a project, I talked about this with John for a little bit during the interview, and I don't think we've said it at the end of the show, but if you have an idea, an artistic passion, something that you want to pursue, just fucking do it. Get off your ass and do it. And when you have it in the can, when you're ready to put it out to the world, you shoot us an email at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com. And we would love to talk to you about it because, like I said to John during the interview, I love putting somebody that puts out the indiest, lowest budget, smallest thing on the same playing field as somebody like Brian Cox from the last episode. Like, what a fucking amazing thing. Like, this is – it's like – it's one of those things where we get to give people that have – an equal amount of passion, a level playing field, no matter where they are in their career. You could be at the very beginning, the very middle, the very end, and we want to talk to you about it. We want you to be on the show because we want to hear what you're doing, because we're passionate about what we do, and we want to talk about talk with people about what they're passionate about.
Who did who else did we talk to today?
Oh, Ryan. Yeah, and Ryan Dunleavy. We really want to thank him today.
Is it Dunleavy?
Dunleavy. Okay. Sorry, okay. My bad. God damn it. I even like went out of my way to say to him, I'm so sorry I mispronounce your name all the time. But artist on Action Comics, or Action Presidents, Action Philosophers.
Come on, that's what it sounds like to me.
He's over there talking about Harry Potter. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Leviosa. Leviosa.
Anyways, Ryan Dunleavy, the artist on Action Philosophers, Action Presidents, which the second issue just came out, and he's just finishing up the fourth issue like drawing, or just starting the fourth issue drawing, which will be about JFK. He said he learned a lot about George Washington doing the comic, which I think is really fun. So. And, of course, Comic Book History of Comics, which is my go-to when people are like, I want to know more about comic books. I'm like, here's a comic book about comic books. So, but, yeah. Man, this is an awesome show. I had a lot of fun. I've had a really good week of podcasting this week. I'm very excited for our show.
I don't know what that means.
Just, you know, we did the interview.
Oh, yeah.
And then
yeah.
We did this episode. We
you
did
almost
two more
didn't make
interviews.
It to the interview.
Oh, dude, made nerve it. Shattering.
Hell nor high water. We've seen them from this interview.
A little behind the curtain to end the show. So we have been trying to set up this interview with Brian Cox. He lives,
couple of weeks.
He lives in Scotland, so there's like a huge time difference. He's, you know, filming in Scotland, so he, you know, he has all that going on.
It's fucking Brian Cox. He's got Brian Cox things happening.
Dude, he's got all sorts of shit.
He's important.
He is important. Like,
we're not that important.
We're pretty important, but we're not that important.
Yeah. We're so good enough to get an interview. Fuck.
So we're like trying to figure out times and scheduling and stuff, and I literally tell Juan, you make the interview happen, I will be there. Like, I don't care if I have to miss a couple hours of work. Like, we'll figure that out, right? So he sets up the interview for one. I tell my work, I got to leave at noon today. You know, I got something to do. They're okay. I leave. My drive home from work is typically a 30-minute drive. I left my job at, like, 12:03, and I got to my house at 12:58, like in a fucking panic attack, like I'm going to lose my mind.
And I'm just sitting there like, deep breaths, call Juan if you can't figure this shit out.
Like, we were having problems with like the conference call. We were having like everything was just like going haywire, and I was running late, and I was in full on panic mode. And then I just hear Brian Cox go, hello. I was like, Mr. Cox? He's all, yes, who am I speaking with? I'm like, this is Gabe from Thinking Outside the Long Box. He's like, excellent. I had a hard time getting onto the conference call, but let's go. I'm like, oh, thank God. And like
10 minutes before the interview, I wanted to check in because I was at work. I was like, okay, around one, I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing unless I'm selling a car and I can't. But I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing. I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go make sure we're all good. And I text him and I don't hear anything. And I texted him question marks. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? You're supposed to be home at this point. I don't hear anything. I was like, oh, shit. Something went sideways. Yeah, I went to Facebook, and I was like, buddy, are you home? And then he Facebooks me instead of texting me. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It's just easier on my phone. The messenger comes up easier than my text does for some reason. But we got it done.
And then he's like, there's a problem. And I was like, what can I do? What's going on?
And I think I tried to tell you, don't worry about it. It's on their end. But I got about halfway through the text message. And then like the assistant to the guy that you were talking to is like, starts talking to me. And then there's like Bob Marley hold music. I'm like, oh my fuck. I can't put all these things in my brain at once.
But it's cool.
It's a great interview.
Emmy winner, Golden Globe winner. It's just pretty cool.
And just overall, super awesome guy. And it was cool because like the anecdotes that I had read that I was going to like asked questions about, he like instinctively brought up. Mm-hmm. When I had him do the ad bump, there was no like stumbling over it. He just nailed it, like take one. I was like, God damn, this
just
dude's
the conversations we've had about it. Like, he's in so many great fucking movies, dude. Like, I know
we
interviewed
him about a really random one.
Yeah, like you interviewed him for fucking Manhunter, but I'm like, he was in Troy. He's in Braveheart. He's in
Rob Roy. He's in Super
Roy,
Troopers.
Super Troopers.
Red.
Both of them.
Water Horse. Which nobody else has seen, but I watch it with my kids and I fucking love that movie.
So many goddamn movies.
Bastion.
No mics. Quiet.
If you're not on the mic, you can't talk. Terrible movie.
Yeah, it's good.
Except for Brian
too.
Cox was amazing.
Yeah.
How can you have a water horse? No legs.
It's like a Nessie. Anyways. Well, everybody, thank you for listening to episode 82 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. I'm Gabe.
I'm Tim.
I'm Doyle.
I'm Juan.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.